This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. The Big Show.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a lovely Tuesday morning. It's a little warmer out there today. I'm supposed to get some showers, 30%. High school chemistry class, we're told, 30%. That's how much it might rain.
High school chemistry class?
Oh, yeah. Physics was worse.
Wait.
You're talking
How'd you do in chemistry?
Percentages?
Not good.
Yeah, wait, where are those on the periodic table?
I went on to Science 11 and somewhat up and down broadcasting career. Lots to get to today, of course. The Winnipeg Jets kicked off their preseason last night with a 3-2 shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild. We'll delve into that. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers return to the practice field as they prepare for Friday's tilt at IGF against the Ottawa Redblacks. The Winnipeg Goldeyes continue to have some epic baseball games in the American Association, down 3-2 in the ninth inning. A balk ties the game. They then go on to play eight more, and in the 17th inning, get a 4-3 victory to force a Game 5 deciding decision, winner-take-all, do-or-die game tonight at Shaw Park. We'll talk about that. NFL Week 2 wrapped up. Juan Carlos Stanton with another laser, 55 on the year. We have two chances for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Mitch Peacock, Brian Munns, Milt Stegall, Jason Cole is going to join us. NHL news and notes. Hey, the top lines in the National Hockey League, as per the Hockey News. We'll delve into that and then take an hour of your phone calls. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Always a delight getting out to the rink. Last night was awesome. Just being there and watching the boys get going, and then come home and you know, watching and paying attention to Monday Night Football as it's unfolding, and the Giants are going nowhere with that O-line. And then after the game, to settle down and watch the shootout, then start following the Goldeyes game. And I made it to the 11th inning and then tapped out. I was like, okay, this is silly. I don't know how long this might go, to wake up this morning and look and go, 17 innings. Holy cow, am I happy I tapped out there. But just awesome that the boys were able to pull it through. And let's hope the I don't know who's going to pitch tonight for either team, but let's hope that the weather holds out here so the boys can get it done tonight.
Yeah, I'm loosening the rotator cuff as we speak. I don't know. It's been a while. I only played first base, but you never know when you need a right-handed arm out of the pen. I made it to 13, and that was kind of the same thing. Like, what am I doing? Like, this could literally go on all night. It almost did, too. But, yeah, pretty cool night. And just getting the Jets, seeing the Jets out there again, I mean, that's the moneymaker there. And the fact that it's like a day or two over 2 weeks away from actual hockey is still not registering in my mind.
Yeah, well, it came up quick. And that's, you know, when we're in this industry, it's weird because we all love covering hockey. We all wait for it to come around. It's been some long off seasons here in Winnipeg, but then it just creeps up on you real quick. And they are 2 weeks away from dropping the puck for real against the Toronto Maple Leafs on October the 4th. But last night, the Minnesota Wild and the Winnipeg Jets, Matthew Perreault, got it going early from Nick Ehlers and Enstrom 45 seconds into the game. And then Charlie Coyle tied it up on the power play, both power play goals in the first period. And then Zach Mitchell in the second period makes it 2-1. And Patrick Laine unleashes the fury at 17:25 of the second on the power play. And that tied the game at 2. They'd go to a shootout, and that is where the Minnesota Wild would win it. Your overall thoughts and impressions of the game last night? And I know we're going to talk about officiating, but we'll start with the Jets and what you saw.
Yeah, was that a game or was that a special teams practice? That's you know, something to be asked. I was up there with Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, and by Ezzy's count, it was 13 penalties. At the end of the second period, there were 13 penalties called. So it was just it was remarkable. And I don't know if this is the officiating, if the plan is is this an experiment and they're going to pull the plug on this come regular season, or are they actually going to change the environment and the culture of the game here with all the slashing and ticky-tap, all kinds of holding penalties too last night, including a horse crap one on Buff real early just to set the tone for the regular season. But you wonder, it's hard for me to imagine the refs are going to keep this going when the regular season starts. But just the amount of special teams, it was like for Kyle Connor could not get on the ice. He had, with 2 minutes and 35 seconds left in the second period, he had 3 minutes and 19 seconds of ice time compared to Brendan Lemieux at 7:12. So it was like waiting to see 81 out there forever. And then eventually later in the game, Paul Maurice starts putting him out there on the penalty kill, which of course isn't going to do anything to strengthen his spot on the team. But it was a weird game because of all the special teams, but at the same time, because of that, it was probably more entertaining than most preseason games.
Yeah, I didn't mind the fact that it was a special. I mean, hey, if you're the Jets, what do you need more practice at? Special teams are 5-on-5, so you get basically, a practice on steroids where you get some actual competition with another NHL team going up against you. But yeah, it's hard to really get a read on a lot of the players just because of the nature of the game. I think the only things you can kind of look at are what the Jets did on the special teams and what Connor Hellebuyck did. I thought Hellebuyck looked real strong. I thought he was really good. And I thought he looked a little bit quicker than he did last season. And there was even a play where Coyle came down the wing late in the game and ripped a high one glove side. Maybe he doesn't make that stop last year, but the glove was a little bit higher and he's able to get at least a piece of it and then showed some nice quickness getting around the net and stopping the wraparound attempt. So I thought Hellebuyck looked at least a little bit improved from what we saw last season. And, I might complain about how certain things were deployed yesterday, but I got my wish and I'm sure whatever the population of Winnipeg is right now got theirs too, and they got to see Patrick Laine on his one-time side, all power play long. Didn't get a ton of opportunities to shoot the puck, but at least it was put in place that this is where 29 is going to be to start the season, and I don't think a lot of people will be too upset with that.
Led all forwards in power play time at 9 minutes and 4 seconds did Patrick Laine. The only Jet who had more power play time was Dustin Byfuglien.
That's just a funny
9 minutes.
By 8 seconds, played 9:12 on the power play. There are players in this game that didn't play 9 minutes. So for those two gentlemen to get that much time on the power play. What'd you think of the officiating? Because as you said, Troy, it's interesting. Why do this if it's not going to be like this in the regular season? This makes absolutely no sense to me. I think this is one of the problems the NHL has, is they do something for training camp or like this, and then they revert back to the old ways, hoping that people keep it in their mind. It doesn't work that way in my mind. So I found it interesting. I didn't like it. It ruined the flow of the game. However, I did not tweet anything about it because I'm the guy that wants some consistency in this, and I want the rules called, and I want them enforced, and that's what was happening yesterday. It's happened across the NHL. Paul Maurice was mentioning it. The Flames and the Oilers were playing split squad games following some of their reporters on Twitter. It was the same case. So do you like this? Do you want it to continue? And Ray Ferraro from TSN tweeting out, this is excellent, and this is what will stop somebody like Mark Mathot from losing the end of his finger come, the latter part of the season. Hopefully this stays for the regular season.
Yeah, I love it. I have absolutely zero problem with it, but the consistency, right? That's what I want to see. I think that's what NHL fans want more or less right across the board. And is the plan to carry this forward through the regular season? I'm not absolutely positive it is. I certainly hope that it is. And eventually the boys will learn, right? Eventually the culture of the game will be impacted in a positive manner, reflecting more of what we see during international type competition, where there's just no BS with the sticks that is allowed to sort of sneak its way into the game. So I'm thumbs up for it. I hope this is a serious effort here by the NHL where they're truly trying to change the culture and hoping that the officials continue to call the exact same game all the way through.
Yeah, and I didn't mind it for 1 second. I loved it right from the get-go. I thought it was awesome. And hey, ruin a preseason game or two. Ruin the whole preseason for like just if you want to wipe out the preseason and have 30 penalty minutes every game, then hey, be my guest, because if you're going to officially get rid of some of the slashes that we've seen, then do it until the players figure it out. And if it if it takes a regular season game or two, well, hey, then the players are too dumb to try and figure out essentially what the rules are. Like, you should not be allowed to slash people on the hands and in the hand area and on the stick without making a general move for the puck. So I thought the refs were great last night. I really did. Maybe they missed a call or two, but that's what the NHL should be doing, is cracking down on these things, and we'll see how many of the Jets players can figure that out by game two and by game three of the preseason moving forward here.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be very interesting, and I think players like Ray Ferraro was talking about on Twitter last night will adjust. It may take a month, 6 weeks, but this is, I think, a good thing. It'll open up the game, because all those things where guys coming across the middle or coming off the board and going towards the net and taking those will go away and create more opportunities, I think, will make the game more exciting. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Troy and Brandon, we're just breaking down last night's 3-2 shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild by the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to get into the Gold Eyes and Bombers in this hour as well. Who stood out to you? Who are you keeping an eye on? We talked about Kyle Connor, played 8:39. Got some penalty killing time, 1:48. Tucker Poolman, 17 minutes, 18 seconds, 59 seconds on the power play, 6:21 shorthanded. Didn't look out of place to me. Looked all right. Not saying enough to make the team, but didn't not make it, that's for sure in my mind.
Yeah, I thought Tucker Poolman looked real nice and steady. And even there was a goal surrendered in the second period. It was a 3-on-2. I thought he played it real well, although the Wild ended up scoring on it. But I thought the way he read the play was real good. He looked very comfortable to me out there. So I don't think, looking at that game, it's not hard for me to imagine that he's knocking on the door of, say, the seventh spot or right there, to be called up fairly quickly in that situation. And I thought Logan Stanley, there was a couple of puck battles that he lost where I didn't feel like he was positioned very well, but he skated better than I was expecting to see, considering a lot of the chatter, negative chatter about it. And then I was Sherratt and Nogier brought to the table. And maybe, Sherratt, I think, is a real solid number seven type of a guy. Like, if he's the seventh guy here for the Jets, 7-8 guy, however they split it here with Poolman, that's pretty solid stuff. And I thought Nogier, in a similar way to Sherratt, but maybe not as physical, like the way Nogier can really skate well, I feel, and he just smart and responsive with the puck. So I was impressed by and large by the decor in a general sense. And then what I loved the line, like having Lemieux and Dano just warm my heart the entire night, seeing them out on the ice together. I thought, boy, if that was ever a fourth line combo, that with the level of grit and sort of the tenacity those couple of guys bring, that would be a lot of fun to watch. Armia made a couple of, like, had a beautiful back check and did a couple things defensively during the course of the game. The whole Connor thing, as I was saying, with two minutes left in the second period, to have only 3 minutes and 19 minutes of ice time was really disappointing. And I just did not understand. I understand all the special teams out there, but why wasn't he on the second team power play? If you're really trying to look and evaluate at this guy and see if he's got what's going to be necessary to stick and stay, and even just to allow him... I know there's obviously not an emphasis on defensive game when you're out there on the power play, but why not take a look at his upper-end offensive talent on that second-team power play? And was kind of mystified as to why Maurice wasn't taking advantage of that and having a real good look at that.
Well, that's probably the best case for Connor, the low ice time, because if the Jets really wanted to take a look at him, they would have got him out more. But the fact that he only gets that amount of time, that I would think that the Jets feel pretty comfortable in what they have with Kyle Connor, and that he's kind of already slotted into that top nine. So, in a roundabout way, you don't get to see much of him, but it might not be the worst thing in the world for the kid either. Yeah, who stood out to me the most? It was easily, when we talk about guys fighting for a roster spot, it was Lemieux and Dano. And I don't even think it was really that close either. They were fun to watch. They really were, and I was surprised to see Brendan Lemieux not really cross the line ever. Like, he got into the scrap, but he was never really in danger of taking a penalty. No. I thought like he was he kept his game in check for the most part.
His first 5 seconds he was on the ice, two real good hits, too, right? Like, established himself quickly.
And I can guarantee in the coach's eyes, Brandon Lemieux did exactly what Paul Maurice wanted to see out of him. He strengthened his case to maybe sneak onto this roster more than I would have expected out of the first game. And I wasn't really impressed by Scarbosa, but a Lemieux-Dano wing combination, that would kind of, like, if you're really married to the concept of a crash-and-bang fourth line, I would give Lemieux-Dano Kopp the time of day to see how that might look in a game. Just to see, I think maybe putting Kopp between those guys and you'd have a little bit of offensive pop, but still the crash-and-bang type of attitude on that line, that would intrigue me a little bit. I think I would be real interested to see if Paul Maurice gives that line a go.
Yeah, I agree with you on Kyle Connor. I think he's going to play a lot of the preseason games where a lot of the veterans that we saw last night won't play as many. When you have Lowry, Little, Wheeler, Ehlers, Laine, Armia, Scheifele, Perreault, I think the game was used, as Paul Maurice said, going into to get the veterans sort of comfortable and going. I think Kyle Connor is going to play some more preseason games than those guys I mentioned, save for maybe Laine, and I think that he'll get his time. But I thought Brendan Lemieux did what he was asked to do, and I thought that if a guy needed to make an impression just by doing what they hoped he would, I thought he did that as well. We'll have much more on this game, and we'll hear some audio as well. We'll talk some Bombers and hear some audio at the bottom of the hour. But up next on The Big Show, we're going to get into this epic 17th inning staving off elimination win by the Winnipeg Goldeyes as they will play for a championship in a fifth and deciding game tonight against Wichita. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, and state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, simply visit TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon will discuss some Bombers, much more to come on the Jets Wild game last night. And of course, we'll have your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up as well. Gentlemen, we touched on it already, but the Winnipeg Goldeyes beat the Wichita Wingnuts 4-3 in 17 innings in Game 4 of the American Association Championship Series at Shaw Park last night. The best of five series tied 2-2, meaning it's all or nothing this evening, 7 o'clock, Shaw Park, to decide a championship. And I believe the Goldeyes' previous three championships have all been won on the road. So this is a chance to watch them potentially clinch this series and a back-to-back American Association championships at home. Tied 3-3 in the bottom of the 17th inning, Casey Turgeon led off with an infield signal. On a 1-2 count, David Rome followed with a double into right field corner that scored Turgeon with the winning run. And that comes being down 3-2 in the ninth, and a balk tied the game to force the extra 8 innings. It's the longest game in American Association history at 5 hours and 59 minutes, 1 second short, or 1 minute short of 6 hours. The previous record was set by the Goldeyes this year at 5 hours and 25 minutes. Are they the cardiac kids? Do they get it done?
Well, it was tremendous. And the weird thing, like, for the Wingnuts to be out there celebrating, only to have that kind of broken down by the ump and to declare the tying run due to balk, like, just a bizarre unfolding of the way everything happened. I'm really, I wonder, I would assume, obviously, at a late night, Andrew Collier, so I would love to have him just talk to us, what, or even Rick Forney. And maybe someone later on during the day here will have him on, I'm sure, maybe on the Don Vito Roundtable or the afternoon drive. But what are they going to do about pitching? I think both teams had one guy left to tap into, possibly. So I just kind of wonder, you know, that whole thing, how it's going to unfold, and just the, even from a playing standpoint, like to be going till 1:30 in the morning last night, and then to be up and at her again today, and in what looks to be, I'm not sure how warm it's going to be, but yesterday was a nice day. But today looks a little bit tough with weather perspective. You just kind of hope the rain holds off and stuff today for the boys. But like a high of 19, it's going to get cool in a hurry at night. So just a real kind of Winnipeg-y baseball night. And you can't, how can you beat this, man? This is awesome.
I was just wondering if the teams wouldn't mind if it started pouring rain at about 3 this afternoon until about 10 tonight and forced the game 5 tomorrow night so they could have a little bit extra rest.
But it's not, yeah, rest for sure. But the weather, like, it doesn't look like the weather is all that. It just looks like it's cloudy or rainy all the way through the rest of the week. So this one, the rest, I'm sure both teams would probably like another day, right? So they might be doing
for
some praying for rain, yeah.
It's going to be epic. This is that time of the year where you don't practice anymore. You just stretch. You try to stay healthy. And for these two teams to bounce back and get to the park and have everything on the line, I think adrenaline will carry it. This is exciting, and we joked with Andrew Collier and joked about the Goldeyes how when they dropped the first game, well, this might set up potentially, you know, you win one, then you come back, you win another one, maybe drop game 4, whatever, but force game 5. I'm sure both teams would like to have this done by now, but this is so exciting, I think, for the Goldeyes and the Wingnuts and for the city, and it'll be very interesting at Shaw Park tonight and how everybody's following this, and a chance to watch a championship at home.
Yeah, well, and try and follow up that game with an encore tonight. We were kind of joking about it before. If you get the whole game in, you might be tuning in to a 20-18 9-inning thriller at Shaw Park tonight because if the starters are at the top of the game, you have no choice. Like, you have to, at this point, both teams have to roll out their starters for, I would assume, at least 7 innings. Well, probably more than that to give your team a chance in case it's tight going down the stretch again.
And the philosophy changes. Like, do you do that or do you get all your starters lined up and you pitch 2-3 innings and you go to the next guy and the next guy? Like, the philosophy that Rick Forney and the Wingnuts manager is going to have and everything else. Pete Rose Jr., by the way, is the guy managing the Wichita Wingnuts. The Pete Rose Jr., who used to play for the Goldeyes at one point. 7 o'clock tonight, Shaw Park, Game 5 to decide American Association title. Get out there if you can. Support the Winnipeg Goldeyes. We'll take a break. Touch on the Blue Bombers who returned to practice yesterday. Next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and TSN 1290 and Knott AutoCorp present the Blue Bus before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and 5 buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever it started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Winnipeg Blue Bombers return to the practice field yesterday in preparations for the Ottawa Redblacks coming to town. Mike O'Shea addressed the media. Your guys' thoughts on this game heading into it. Ryan Lindell is going to be a quarterback for the Ottawa Redblacks. By the way, Dave Naylor yesterday reporting on Drew Tate, saying he's regarded as week to week but not ruled out for this week, but it's unlikely. And then more on Tate. Dave Naylor reported just bruised and sore, but it is Ryan Lindell who's coming in, the third string quarterback for the Ottawa Redblacks. Does that help the Bombers?
Oh, it's hugely helpful in to me. I know this guy was in the NFL for a bit, but most Americans have had something, a cup of coffee in the NFL, dealing with the additional guy on the field and everything that comes into play here. For an American quarterback to come up and try and be successful, you're talking about in the CFL a rookie quarterback standing behind center for the Bombers, and there's no way he's going to operate at the level that a Trevor Harris would have had he had been healthy. So it's a pretty juicy situation here for the Bombers, who should be ultra prepared here, coming off a bye week and healthy, getting Loeffler back, getting Knox back here. So it's just good. They're in a good situation. And this is a type of game to me where a real good team, like a team that is there, is going to take advantage of the situation. And you want to win this game handily. You want to win it by 20-plus points type of a thing to me. Don't crap the bed here and take them for granted and come in and be flat. I certainly hope we don't see that. Let's see a team here that's ready for the second half of the season, who's in a wicked race here for a possible home playoff game in the West, and ultimately still ideally hunting Calgary, but just come out and really make a statement with this game.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, if you can't stop Ryan Lindley at quarterback, how are you going to stop Bo Levi Mitchell? How are you going to stop Mike Riley or Kevin Glenn in a playoff, even if it is at home? Like, you're right. Like, the bare minimum, it's a dangerous game for the Bombers, because the bare minimum should be, you know, assuming the offense operates at a decent level, it should be a two-score, 14-20-point victory for the Bombers. Like, to allow Ottawa and Lindley to score more than 20 points would be, it would be beyond disappointing, and it is a game where they should take care of things. But I'm not going to look at this as a game that they should control from start to finish, just because this defense has struggled against Darian Durant twice, and Darian Durant has looked like a backup quarterback in the CFL every other game this season, and they've yet to really have that kind of statement game when it comes to the secondary. And we even saw last week or 2 weeks ago against Saskatchewan. They got the win and they forced turnovers, which was great. Four ginormous plays on some of the biggest broken coverages you'll ever see. So until I see the Bombers defense put forth a standout performance, I'm going to look at this game with a bit of caution and a bit of hesitation, even with Lindley in at QB.
I know the whole 300-yard thing isn't what it used to be a couple years ago. Like, every quarterbacks irregularly throw for 300-plus yards, but I don't believe the Bombers have yet to allow or to keep a quarterback under 300 yards. It would be real nice this week to see that.
Is that true? Like, not one quarterback?
I don't believe so. I'm just going through each week here. Yeah. It didn't happen against Saskatchewan, and I don't think it had happened previous to that.
I know the miracle at IGF, Durant went over 300.
Yeah. Even that disappointing game here. Yeah, I don't think it's happened yet.
Well, Mike O'Shea addressed the media yesterday. The bye week is the team coming off that. We'll get his thoughts on coming off the bye week and if it came at a good time in just a moment. But is this good or bad bye weeks at this time of the season with the being 8-3? I mean, obviously it has its pros and its cons, but is this at the right time for this team?
Well, I don't think there's any cons, not at this time of year, especially when weighed against the week one bye, which is the ridiculousness of it. This is perfect, man. To come out after the Labor Day clash here in those couple of weeks and just where it is situated after 11 games, this is perfect sort of thing to springboard forward and just give her now. You know, people have always said in the CFL, and everyone feels like this in the locker room, that the season gets going after Labor Day. So to have that bye week, come back refreshed, ready, all poised in the situation that they are at 8-3, this is perfect.
Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on if the bye week came at a good time.
Yeah, I believe so. Played 11 games in a row, and as I said before, it's time for these guys to get away and catch their breath again, and not just physically but mentally, as every bye week is used for, but in terms of how it split up our season, I think that's served its purpose really well.
And they come out of this with Matt Nichols, the number one rated quarterback, with the QUAR system that the CFL rates quarterbacks. And he's got a lengthy lead over the second-place quarterback. He right now is the highest-rated quarterback in the CFL.
That's above average.
is it elite? It's a Joe Flacco elite. You could make the case he's been the best quarterback this year. He might not be the best quarterback in the CFL, but you could make he's been the best quarterback to play this year. Bo Levi's kind of eased off statistically a little bit over the past few weeks. Of course it's terrifying.
Yeah,
of course it's terrifying. And even Mike Riley, with all the injuries they've had, his numbers have taken a bit of a hit. Nichols has been the most consistent for sure. I think we can all agree on that.
I think consistently, yeah, week to week, he has been the most consistent for sure. Mike O'Shea was also asked about the status of Jamal Westerman for this Friday's game against the Red Blacks.
He's got to get some more evaluation done, and we'll see. We'll make a find out tomorrow what's going on.
Getting back Loeffler, I believe they get back Knox as well. You know, so the getting back Loeffler thing helps. Santos Knox filled in admirably for Knox. So you got the good thing when you can survive injury like that and secure a victory. It just adds to the depth component of your team, right? And that'll pay off as the season continues on here.
Now, we've been talking about the linebacker position all year. Some weeks good, some weeks bad, and it goes on and on. Tim Baines from the Ottawa Sun was reporting on Twitter, and of course, Three Down Nation had this as well. He said Khalil Bass was told, this is on September 15th, Khalil Bass was told he was going to move and be back up to Taylor Reed this week, was unhappy. GM Marcel Desjardins says Bass was asked if he still wanted to be here, and he said no, so he was released. Head coach Mike O'Shea was asked if the Bombers would have any interest in signing Khalil Bass.
We like our guys. Our guys are doing a good job for us. Khalil is a good player for us. You know, he's signed in Ottawa, and I'm not sure what's transpired there, obviously. But, you know, as of right now, I think our guys are good football players.
I tell you what, man, you got to be real careful when your ego starts trouncing everything around you. And Khalil Bass, of, you know, 39 tackles in 11 games as a middle linebacker, two sacks, are obviously not happy with what he's doing. And if you don't have the humility to sit there and still collect a check, right? You're still going to be collecting a check here if you're Khalil Bass in Ottawa and just go, no, let me go. And you're cut adrift now in a league where if the Bombers don't want you at middle linebacker, that's pretty scary, isn't it? If they're right, like they don't want to cause any sort of disruption. To me, that speaks a little bit about Khalil Bass as well. Like maybe there's something at work there where, no, we don't want that guy in the locker room right now. We're okay with what we've got. But if the Bombers don't want you tell me who is going to want you. And now Khalil Bass is quite likely to find himself on the outside looking in, trying to land a spot next year. You got to check that ego at the door, man.
Couldn't you say, well, I would like a trade because I feel like I'm a starter, but, you know, I'll be the good soldier. But can you try and figure something out here? As opposed to, no. And then not get a check, like you said.
I think just keep your mouth shut. And you're saying be a good soldier. Keep your mouth shut and work your butt off in practice and trying to work your way back into being a starter.
Well, I agree with that. But I'm just saying it isn't even what I said a better alternative no, I want out.
I would think so. But that's not the route he took. And when it comes, I mean, we didn't hear anything about Bass being a negative dude when he was here. So I'm not really worried about that. I mean, what it comes down to is he a better middle linebacker than Sam Hurl? I think he is. I think he's more athletic, and I think he's every bit as savvy when it comes to recognizing plays. And you know, he's not a player that's incapable of the game mentally. So if that's the case, O'Shea's not going to come out and say, "Yeah, we're going to sign him," because blah 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 blah. He's going to protect his guys, but.
But Mike
or if they don't sign him, Wicks, something is – like you don't hear about everything in the locker room, right? If a guy has a disturbance in there, you're not going to hear about it unless something happens and like off outside of that locker room to allow it to be known. But they keep those types of things quiet. If Khalil Bass ends up not getting signed anywhere, and especially here in Winnipeg, then you have to question things in that locker room
and to your point, Mike O'Shea has proven in the past under his guidance and leadership they don't
pass
want guys around
who
are issues like that. So we'll have to see if Khalil Bass gets another job in the CFL, and if so, where. Finally, head coach Mike O'Shea, this is the big show, by the way. We're teeing up the Bombers and the Red Blacks this Friday at IGF, and we'll have a pair of tickets to give away coming up to the Bomber game as well in today's broadcast. But right now, Mike O'Shea was asked about preparing for Ryan Lindell at quarterback for the Red Blacks this Friday.
Well, I think something that Coach Campbell had said is that they have a system, right? So each quarterback that goes in is going to run their system, and I'm sure there's some things that every quarterback on every team like a little bit better than others, and their offensive coordinators probably use that, you know, than they would, you know, depending on each guy. But their system's their system, so I believe that he's going to go in and run their offense.
My apologies. It's Ryan Lindley is who he's preparing for, the guy who did with Arizona Cardinals. Ryan Lindell, the kicker for the Bills. Ryan, like Ryan.
Which R-I-A-N. Would be a better break for the Bombers. But go get this guy, right? I don't care NFL or not. Like I said, there's almost every American quarterback coming up has had something to do with the NFL. But just go get him. Go be aggressive as heck and go get him. Help out that secondary. And it'd be real nice, even though it's against a third-string guy here, to go make some level of statement in this game that can help you go forward and have this defense improve coming home.
Is there any worry about him coming in and getting a shot and being around the NFL, being around the CFL for a while to maybe put up 300 and a couple TDs?
Well, I'm not worried. To me, that would be a real unfortunate event if that's what unfolds. If he freaking throws for 340 or something like that and you know, just makes it even a competitive game and the Bombers have to squeak out, like, for the love of God, go make a statement, defense. You can't let this guy come in and own you like that.
I'm not going to discount it. I think it's a very real possibility. I really do. He's a big guy with a big arm. And if I remember correctly, Mike Riley is also a big cat with a big arm, and he threw about a dozen jump 50-50 balls out there in the game against Edmonton, and the Bombers DBs looked like they were trying to catch a baseball in the sun with no glove on. So I'm not if Ottawa's looking at this game, they're probably looking at it kind of the opposite way we are. Hey, we could take advantage of this secondary, even if it is our third string guy. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them target the half of the field that doesn't have Heath and Randall on it. And if that's the case, and maybe they throw a couple deep balls, and all it takes is landing two or three of those, and you're able to get some points off that, they can make this game real interesting.
Ryan Lindley, a quarterback for the Red Blacks, coming in on Friday to face the Bombers. We'll have some tickets to give away to Friday's game coming up in the big show. But up next, we touch on the NFL Monday Nighter. And we'll talk a little baseball, too, on the big show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
It's go time. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Don't you worry about blue. On the big show, TSN 1290, last night in the Monday Nighter to wrap up Week 2 in the National Football League, the Detroit Lions went on the road and beat the New York Giants 24-10. Gentlemen, the Giants in two games this year are now 0-2 and have scored a grand total of 13 points. Giants head coach Ben McAdoo, grease and formula in that lid, had this to say about his offense and his quarterback's play after the game last night.
There's more than one player. Sloppy quarterback play. Quarterback and a center need to be on the same page there. We got to get the ball snapped.
Why did you call a timeout?
Because we have a veteran quarterback who's played a lot of football. I expect us to get the ball snapped.
How would you assess Eli's play
role? Usually the clock goes from 3-2-1-0. Once it hits zero, they look at the ball, look at the clock. Usually have a tick once it hits zero to get the ball snapped without it being a delay game. I thought we had a chance to get it off.
Ben McAdoo, the head coach of the Giants, calling out two-time Super Bowl champion Eli Manning for some of the Giants' offensive woes. You have a problem with that?
Well, unless he's got a real good relationship with Eli, knows that Eli can take it and stuff. Yeah, I gotta. That's typically you are knocking on the end of a tenure as a head coach when you start calling out guys like that. So that's a substantial thing there. And you know, the way Eli will respond to it, the way he does, he will respond the way you're supposed to, right? Where you take the responsibility on you as a quarterback and all the rest of it, and he won't come back, I can't imagine, to the head coach. But you see head coach make public announcements like this and specifically going at guys, that's typically the sign of the end. And I don't know what he really, you know, in that one play, sure, maybe a man could have got it off, but the amount of duress and pressure that he was under the entirety of the night, 5 sacks and multiple more than that under pressure, and he got Flowers at left tackle that's just in gong show mode. They're not giving him any support over there with, say, a tight end or a running back to help in any way. Hart gets injured. I believe it was their left guard that goes to right tackle, and they bring in a guy to play left guard. Like, the whole O-line is just an absolute mess. And a lot of people had high expectations of the Giants. A lot of people picking them to win their division this season. The two teams this year that people across the board in the NFL picked to maybe make some noise, the Giants and the Seahawks, neither one of them have a resemblance of an old line. And neither one of these two teams, the Giants and the Seahawks, are going anywhere this year. You can't fix an old line. That as bad as those two old lines are, there's nothing you can do about it once you're into the season like this. And both those two teams, in my opinion, are dead as far as being Super Bowl contending teams.
Although Russell Wilson gives the Seahawks a chance, right? Like, at least you have a chance in games with Wilson's legs. Eli, and this isn't his fault, but there's no way he lasts the season. Some of the the fact that he didn't go into some kind of concussion protocol on that one play where I don't know which line it was, but my God, how he was even awake and moving after that hit, where he just, you know, in typical Eli fashion, just throws it up blindly, and of course some giant comes down with the football. But the play McAdoo's talking about there, of course it was Eli Manning's fault. What the hell are you doing coming out and saying that? Like that was the reason you guys lost the game. It wasn't the fact that Eli is basically, you know, praying that he doesn't get killed every single snap and he has no time to look downfield ever. The Giants, I mean, the NFL is a weird place because, you know, when a team looks like they're down and out, somehow they find a way to turn things around. But the way the Eagles front has played so far this season, and they've played against some pretty good O-lines, and they have dominated them. And Fletcher Cox has like 3 sacks early on, and Brandon Graham's been great. I don't know if Eli Manning makes it out of that Philly game. I really don't.
And when you're talking about things that the way things brew inside of locker rooms, if you're part of the Giants defense there and you held Stafford to 122 yards and the leading rusher for the Lions was held to 86 and you lose the game by 2 touchdowns, like what more can you do as a defense? It's amazing. If anyone said Stafford throws for 122 and their leading rusher is 86 yards, you're going to think the Giants lose that game by 2 touchdowns?
I had the Giants in the playoffs. I no longer do. I don't think they can beat Dallas. I don't think they can beat Philly. And I think they at best could split with Washington. I don't know how they're going to score against Washington to keep pace with Kirk Cousins and that offense. So it's interesting. It's interesting that he called out Eli Manning. I have no problem with calling out your quarterback if he's not playing well. I just don't think that one play was his fault. I don't think that. Well, I guess everybody could be better, but I wouldn't lay that at his feet. We got to go, but Juan Carlos Stanton, his 55th bomb of the year last night, his first in 6 games. He now is 55, obviously 5 away from 60, 6 away from 61 with 12 games remaining. We'll keep an eye on that. Mitch Peacock's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on TSN 1290, 5 minutes past the hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and lots to get to, not only on today's show, but this hour. NHL news and notes. The captain of the Minnesota Wild have a new contract. We'll touch on that. And the hockey news has the top lines in the National Hockey League out. We'll delve into that as well. Brian Munns, a Jets analyst, is going to join us at the bottom of this hour. And, of course, your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And we'll hear from Connor Hellebuyck and some of the Jets on last night's 3-2 shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild. All that to get to. Our next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center, and it is with our good friend and voice of the Manitoba Moose on moosehockey.com and right here on TSN 1290, Mr. Mitch Peacock. Good morning, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Yourself?
Doing well. Thank you very much. Were you at the Gold Eyes game last night?
I wish I was, but I'd be just walking in the door if I was.
Good point by you. Once again, the Fish staved off elimination last night. 17-inning, 4-3 win. They'll decide the championship tonight at Shaw Park at 7:05 is first pitch. We know the Jets camp is well underway. We know a lot of prospects are there. Give us the schedule for the Manitoba Moose and when they get underway or what's been going on with them as camp unfolds here for all National Hockey League and American Hockey League teams.
Yeah, the real camp in earnest for the Moose will begin on Monday coming up. A couple of exhibition games to cap next week with a contest in Grand Forks on Friday the 29th and Fargo the 30th, and then a few days of practice to get ready for a trip to Grand Rapids to take on the defending league champs in the opening game of the season, October the 6th and October 7th as well. And then back home for the home opener on October the 13th with the Cleveland Monsters in town. Lots to look forward to on opening weekend with not only the home opener on the Friday night, the 13th, but also a Sunday afternoon game at 2 o'clock. A number of afternoon games this season for family-friendly reasons, and it's a lot of fun not only to come out and see the Jets American Hockey League team play, but to come out at a time when it works for people of all ages, and you know, you get your morning in, you get a chance to take in the game, and then still have some of the day left. So lots to look forward to with the Moose when the season really cranks up beginning next week.
Mitch, 48 points last year in 65 games for Jack Roslovic. If he does settle in with the Moose here to start the season, what level of expectations should we have for Jack Roslovic this year?
Yeah, good question. It's interesting to watch Jack come along here. You know, Craig Heisinger pointed out on the weekend at FanFest when he was talking with fans that Jack Roslovic is a guy he's really curious to see this season because he likes his approach. He likes his, goal setting, if you will. Because last year, if you remember, Jack came to camp with the option of being assigned to the OHL's London Knights. And he had his mind set that he was going to play professional hockey. His goal was to play in the American Hockey League. And he really gave the Jets organization no choice with the way that he performed and then justified being selected to play for the Moose by being the team's leading scorer, as you pointed out. So he set his mind to it, and he reached the level that he was hoping to set last season, which also included a World Junior Championship, as you know. And so he comes back this year now with a real focus as well to try and push himself to a new level and to see how he can perform. And I think this is a guy who has a tremendous natural ability. He's got the brain to understand the game and to grow his game at a higher level. And I think I haven't had a chance to talk to Jack specifically about this yet this fall, but I think there's a guy there who really believes that he's just scratching the surface, that he really showed off some of his natural offensive instincts when it came to the power play last year as a younger player. But I think as he becomes stronger and more understanding of how he can influence games 5-on-5, then you're going to see even more production from Jack Roslovic. And he's a guy that probably in his mind has a real clear sense of maybe not points that he wants to get, but how he wants to play and how he wants to help his team. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him.
And along those lines with Jack Roslovic, let us know where Chase DeLeo's at with his career and the year that he's got coming up here. Obviously, there's been a lot more talent brought into the organization. He's still highly thought of, but where's he at heading into this season in your mind?
I felt like last season was a transition year for Chase DeLeo. Chase, as you know, was a big point producer in junior with a very successful Portland Winterhawks team. He came up to the pros, was a guy who they leaned on for offense with the Moose in his first year 2 years ago, did a great job helping in that capacity. But the Jets have seen that Chase DeLeo can play the game 200 feet, and they really encouraged him to learn that aspect, that way of playing. And so what we saw last season from Chase was more of a well-rounded game and also a game that wasn't limited to playing center ice. He showed that he could play center ice. He could play on either wing. He could play higher up the lineup if he needed offensive chances. He could play lower down the lineup if he wanted to check some. So I think what Chase has done is something that sometimes has to happen for high-end offensive guys in junior, which is coming to pro and realizing that you're not necessarily going to slide into that same role at the next level of play. And he's found a way to play at the professional level and a way to be an asset to the organization, and I think that's a credit to him. He's also gotten a little leaner over the course of the summer. He went through something a lot of young players went through last year where he felt like he needed to be bigger and stronger. He made himself bigger and stronger with a real dedication to fitness, but found himself to be just a little off the quickness that he would have liked to have in his game. So this summer went back to the drawing board and has come in fit as ever, but in a different way. And it looks like he's got some nice jump in camp. So he's you know, the organization has changed. The depth has changed, but Chase DeLeo has changed and has shown that he is, you know, a very useful professional.
Mitch, we had someone call in last week saying that they felt when Nick Batan came down to the Moose last year that he maybe didn't apply himself at the level that would be hoped for or at the level necessary. When you saw Nick Batan down with the Moose, what was your thought with his game and maybe specifically defensively how you thought he looked?
Boy, that's a tough one. That was a long time ago because you might recall that at the very beginning of the season, the Moose had Nick Batan. They had Marco Dano and they had Andrew Kopp. But by, oh, I would say 8-10 games in, all three of them were gone. And so really, you know, got a small sample of where he was at that time. So it would be tough for me to say. I know that when he played significantly more games with the Moose the year before last, that Keith McCambridge would say, in general terms, talking about Nick Batan, talking about Chase DeLeo and some of the other younger players, that they needed to get the junior out of their game. That's a long time ago now for Nick Batan. He's developed a better understanding of the game when it comes to responsibilities in all three zones. Clearly, he's a guy who's got an offensive bent and many natural abilities in that way. So I don't think you're going to turn Nick Petan into a checker or ask him to play, you know, a certain role that doesn't have a focus on offense. But at the same time, everybody's got that responsibility and has to have that understanding to be able to help a team. And so I think Nick's certainly smart enough and competitive enough to play some defense in his game and certainly has the tools to make a difference offensively. At the American Hockey League level, he's a dramatic influence on the game. He can control the speed of the game, the energy in the game, can set up plays and see things that a lot of players can't, certainly at the American Hockey League level. And I think that's why he's getting the extended opportunity that he is to be a National Hockey League player, because he just does some things that are NHL level.
Voice of the Manitoba Moose, Mitch Peacock, joining us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. Your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas still to come. And Brian Munns will join us at the bottom of the hour. Mitch, ooh. Patrice, a guy, Brian Munns? If you haven't heard of him, just ask him. Just kidding, Munzie. Patrice Cormier back and was captain last year. Where's he sit in the organization? Because obviously I think, you know, I'm not going to say his time in the National Hockey League is past. Injuries, everything else can come up. But he's really developed into that guy that the Moose rely on and probably, as I say, already fair to say, carved out a good American Hockey League career for himself here.
Oh, without a doubt. Patrice Cormier is a proven quality professional. He's been around this organization for many years, as you know, coming over from Atlanta with them and being, you know, up and down with the big team for a while when the team first moved over from Georgia. But this guy is a guy who's a leader, a natural leader, a guy who has a real ability to bring a group together. You know from being around him, Jim, Patrice has a tremendous sense of humor. He also has a real determined streak, and he knows when it's time to work. He knows when it's time to put your feet up and laugh a little bit. And so as a result, he's a really valuable force in the organization. And he gets guys who come down to loosen up and relax a little bit, not feel bad about where they are and get to work. He gets young guys who've come in and don't really know if they belong to feel like they belong and just concentrate on getting better. And that's just the interpersonal part of it. That's just the personality side of Patrice Cormier. And then there's the player, Patrice Cormier, and he's just flat-out no fun to play against. He gets out there and just gets in your face. He gets in your way. He makes it hard on you and just knows how he can use his tools to make his team better. I don't know about NHL or American League or all of that part of it. I just know that this is a guy that the organization feels is a very important part of things when you see what he can do to help the Manitoba Moose, at least at this stage.
Yeah, he is, I will attest, a very funny guy, that's for sure. Mitch, great stuff. We appreciate you joining your time. Enjoy the start of training camp, and we'll touch base with you as it goes on.
Always fun, guys. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Mitch.
Mitch Peacock, voice of the Manitoba Moose on The Big Show. Of course, you can hear his call on Moose Hockey at moosehockey.ca. Wait a minute. Is it moosehockey.com? I knew that was wrong. Moosehockey.com. And, of course, right here on TSN 1290. This segment was a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at olympic-buildings.ca. We have your chance to qualify next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruick. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through, as you just heard, 780-1290 is TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights. Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Get a t-shirt. Get a UNLV Runnin' Rebels t-shirt. My favorite college basketball team, despite the indiscretions in the program over the years. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Hrushevsky on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th, September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290. Two qualifiers to go this morning. We'll start it with our first one. I believe, are we doing a bonus qualifier today online on our Facebook page? I think that's today.
You got me, babe.
I'll double check that. 1290, TSN 1290 Facebook page. I believe we're qualifying somebody else online today. So that could be three qualifiers on The Big Show. But our first qualifier of the day is Mr. Brandon Rewicki.
It's Ken Warwick.
Ken Warwick. Congratulations, sir. How are you?
Great, Jim. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. You're all business today, eh? You're pretty...
Well, we're up and at 'em.
Up and at 'em, taking care of stuff, and you're now qualified for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Just for doing so, you've won a Jets Gear gift card. Do you know who you would take, should you be one of the grand prize winners?
Oh, I'd absolutely take my wife.
Nice, absolutely. See,
that's
you're
about
learning,
the most
eh?
Upbeat, positive one we've had. Yeah,
you listen that. Through the week, and you're like, I'm not making that mistake.
No, not at all.
Absolutely, no doubt. Don't even need to think about it, taking the wife. Have you been to Vegas before?
Yeah, we've been there a couple times and taken a few shows, did a little golf. So yeah,
awesome.
Going back if we could.
So you know exactly what you would spend the $1,290 cash in. A couple shows, maybe some golf?
You got it.
Awesome. What shows have you seen in Vegas?
A couple of Cirque du Soleil's, Jersey Boys, which was great. It was about it. Can't remember if we saw any other ones, but... yeah, that was a good spot, and we look forward to going to the new arena.
Ken, you sound like a real Renaissance man. I like it.
Culture.
Good job, man. Good job. Nice. Well, congratulations once again, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290. You've got yourself a Jets Gear gift card, and you're in for the next four grand prize draws, September 25th, October 9th, October 23rd, and November 6th, right here on The Big Show. Enjoy your day, sir. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Jim. Bye-bye.
Good luck, man.
Ken Warwick is our latest qualifier on The Big Show. We'll do it again at 8:15 p.m. or a.m., 8:15 a.m. You guys want to come back tonight and qualify somebody?
Sure,
probably
man.
Not.
I'm good.
and we will, I believe, today is a TSN 1290 Facebook page qualifier after the show as well. So make sure you log on for that. The Winnipeg Jets themselves lost their first preseason game of the year, 3-2 last night in a shootout to the Minnesota Wild at Bell MTS Place. And Connor Hellebuck talked about his offseason after the game last night.
I felt like myself. I felt very calm in there, and I felt a lot faster in control. I don't think I ever got caught swimming, and I was able to keep my eye on most of the pucks.
Yeah, I'll agree. It looked very in control, for sure, during the course of the game. There wasn't nothing he could do to me on the first goal, for sure. On the second goal, just a real nice shot, top shelf like that, a guy coming hard. The one thing I was watching and wondering... Yeah, you got a young guy in net. You got a bunch of veterans up there on the power play. And I talked about this a little bit last year. Bang, 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 bang. His stick 10, 12 times banging the power play as they're moving the puck around beautifully in that offensive zone. And I can't help but wonder if in the mind of Dustin Byfuglien, they skate back and say, kid, stop the freaking puck. That's your job, right? We got things on lockdown on the power play. Just stop it already. And you can hear him screaming a couple times back there. But they looked, when they're moving the puck around, for a guy that spent most of my life in net and as a kicker, sort of the double whammy of knowing your spot within the framework of a team, like I just find that a little bit interesting.
You mean like banging the stick to let him know the penalty's coming to an end? Or
no, he's not banging a stick. He's banging a stick to get them motivated and get some shots on net, go get a goal. Has nothing to do with the timing of the penalty. Hmm. It just always.
I didn't notice it on the TV broadcast.
Oh yeah.
Because generally, yeah, you do it at the end of the power play. But if he's doing it with a minute 10 left, then yeah, I can. Hey, and I'm always down with if you're a goalie, just keep your mouth shut and stop the puck. That as a forward, I'm down with that kind of mindset. But I thought he looked good. I did think he looked improved a little bit quicker, a little bit. And like he said, you never really worry about him having to kind of find his way back into the crease. Like there's always a limited amount of movement with Hellebuck, and I know he got beat on the one glove side, but that one is, you know, within 5 feet of him. It would be a miracle to stop that one. But I thought the glove looked a bit higher than it did last year, and I thought on the coil shot, able to get his mitt on that one a little bit, might have maybe hinted at you know, a bit of improvement when it comes to stopping those shots kind of as they try to buzz the tower there.
He had the big soft and square thing going on last night pretty good.
Made 34 saves on 36 shots last night. And Trevor Kidd on the postgame show with Kevin Olszewski here on TSN 1290 said he saw Wade Flaherty at the rink. And he just asked him, how are your guys? And he said, you know what, they're really good. And he mentioned that Connor Hellebuck is very confident, is in a great mind space at the start of this season after the offseason. So Wade Flaherty was really happy with the mindset that Connor Hellebuck had coming back to training camp. We'll talk more about the Jets next with Brian Munns on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday here on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star. And we could be featuring them very soon on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, 33 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. And we welcome into the program Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, Mr. Brian Munns. How are you, sir?
Guys, how are you?
Good, thank you. How'd that feel last night, preseason for everybody and getting back at the rink? And I know you're at the Young Stars Tournament in Penticton, but to be back at Bell MTS Place and seeing some real action for the first time this season.
Yeah, it was fun. It was long. It was a long night when you look at all the power plays and penalty kills, but you know, we expected it from talking to a couple of the other broadcasters around the league that had done games a couple of nights before, and Paul Maurice was quick to mention as well that you know, he watched the Vegas game and there were 9 power plays, and you watched the Canucks and Kings before that, and I think they had 6 in the first period as well. So the league's trying to clamp down and trying to get the players on the same page. So the biggest thing we hope is that if they're going to call it this tight, that they do it during the regular season as well. But you know, overall it was good for the guys to get onto the ice, and I think you know, Brendan Lemieux put it best when he talked to us in the first intermission that it was fun after 3 days to be able to battle against other players and not your own teammates, and you didn't have to ride that line as much. You could do what makes you do well as a player. And I thought Brendan Lemieux was one of those noticeable guys last night.
I got to get back to the penalties just for a sec here. There's 17 power plays during the course of the game. There were 13 penalties called by the end of the second period. I'm wondering, from a hockey, enjoying hockey standpoint, do you feel the NHL will continue this in the regular season? And B, do you want them to?
Well, I hope they do. You know, we've seen this a couple of years. I don't think it was this drastic, but they want to try and speed the game up. And if it's slowing it down in the preseason to get everybody to understand what the protocol is going to be, we might have to battle through a couple of games. Do I like it? I don't know, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, but at the end of the day, we don't really have a choice. So I think we all have to live with it. I would assume that it'll get better as the preseason wears on. At least I would hope it would, because, boy, by the time we were done the shootout last night, I think Paulie and I were joking, we were on the air for close to 3 hours in last night's game, and it was the first of 7. So hopefully it does get better. But and I also think the players are going to understand. Like, Marcus Foligno took that slash last night on Matthew Perreault, and as soon as he got his stick up, you could just see his shoulders drop, and he just started to go right to the penalty box. He knew what he did wrong. So again, you know, hopefully it gets a little bit better by everybody involved.
Brian, we were talking about Connor Hellebuck today, and I was listening to the postgame show with Trevor Kidd and Kevin Olszewski, and he was talking about having a chat with Wade Flaherty and just asked him how his guys were. And Wade was talking about how good Connor Hellebuck is, like mentally, physically, how he's come to camp and how prepared he is to sort of continue to develop and take the next step. Looked good last night. What are your impressions of Hellebuck this training camp so far?
I thought he played a really good, patient game last night. To go the distance, Paul talked at the beginning of the game that he may only use him for 2 periods, depending how busy the night was. But, you know, he'd go on a flurry of making two or three stops, and then he had a little bit of downtime in there. And the focus for me was the big thing that I saw from Connor. You didn't see him wandering around very much, and I think that's just the maturation process right now. Found it really intriguing as well. We talked to him on the weekend one day after one of the training camp sessions, and you know, Steve Mason's the big story coming in here. And I asked Connor, hey, you know what, you've got an older guy with you now. Is there less pressure on you? You can just go out and play. And he said, no, you know, I kind of look at it the opposite way right now. I'm putting a little bit more pressure on myself to be as good as what everybody expects Steve Mason to be. So I think he learned a lot last year, both on and off the ice, as to what it takes to play in the National Hockey League and, you know, one day be a number one netminder. So despite the valleys that he had to go through, there were some peaks as well last season. And hopefully he's taken them all in stride here and uses it the right way. But I think it was a good first night. I think leaving the rink last night that, you know, he could feel pretty good about this game that he played. And, you know, he didn't let any bad goals in. I thought the goals that went in were goals that Minnesota deserved credit for scoring. And then once you get into a shootout, really anything can happen. And, you know, only one got by him there off the stick of Ryan Malone.
It's pretty wild to think that 4 years, going into his fifth year now in the NHL, Jacob Trouba, 23 years old, Tucker Poolman, a year older than Jacob Trouba, and just getting his NHL career possibly started here with the Jets. What you're hearing about Tucker Poolman and how far away, if he is far away, he might be from being a part of the big club, Brian?
First and foremost, I think, Troy, when you look at it, it was just the second time that he was able to throw a Jets jersey on, the first being in Penticton for that third and final game. And I know the organization wants to be careful with him just based on the fact that he went through the double shoulder surgery, and you don't want to push anything real early. But again, and I'll kind of use the phrase that I used in talking about Connor Hellebuyck, I thought he played a real patient game. You know, there were areas last night where you didn't notice him, kind of like Ben Sherratt's game last night. I thought Ben was really good as the night wore on, but for half the game, you had to take a look to make sure he was there. And for me, when you're kind of a defensive defenseman and the role that they played last night, if those guys fly under the radar, that's a good thing. And the one thing that I noticed in Penticton for Poolman is he's able to get shots through to the net with traffic in front. And as the game wore on last night, there were some point shots there that were able to find either one of the Minnesota goaltenders. I think he finished the night with three shots on net and had a block shot in the defensive zone as well. So a pretty good first impression for Tucker Poolman. I know he was nervous going in. He mentioned it before the game that his dad and his brother had made the trip up from North Dakota, and they were getting a chance to watch him for the first time. So there might have been a little bit more going on mentally going into that game last night for Poolman than other games that he will. But I thought he asserted himself pretty well.
Brian Munch, Jets analyst on TSN 1290, joining us on the Big Show this morning, 40 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290. What did you think of the big guys in the lineup? A lot was made of the veteran lineup, Wheeler, Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, of course, had a goal. Your impressions of them and really how Paul Maurice said prior to the game that they don't want to start slow. They want to get right at it, and that's why there were so many veterans in the first game.
To me, Brian Little was the best of the top six. That he was just all over the ice and an area that the Jets as a team need to get better is the faceoff circle, and he was Winnipeg's best last night. I think he went 16 for 19, and to have only three losses against Charlie Coyle and some other Minnesota players in there that are pretty good on the draw statistically over the last couple of years, that says something to me for Brian. Just the power play and penalty kill, I think, kind of skewed the game a little bit too in that regard, where they didn't get a lot of five-on-five time. They did play a lot on the power play, but, you know, all five are noticeable. Scheifele took that hit last night, was able to bounce back and continue on in the game. Ehlers blocked a shot early on in the contest, took one off the ankle. So Matty Perreault and I were joking in the intermission with Paul there that, you know, summer hockey's over now when you see guys dropping as quick as they did. So all in all, it was the first game for those guys. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them again coming up in one of these next two games, just based on the fact that Maurice wants to make sure that everybody is going here and they're ready to go for the Toronto game to open up the regular season. So to get a little bit of that rust off and get back into the bump and grinding game was good for everybody. And we all like to see Patrick Laine score, and he was able to light the lamp last night on the power play and has shown that he hasn't lost anything over the summer with that big shot. He looked good in that left-wing circle trying to get it off. Now it's just a matter of being able to do it again on a consistent basis throughout this preseason and then again against the Leafs.
I guess for everyone out there who's sort of champing at the bit waiting for Brendan Lemieux to stick and stay with the big team, that's exactly the kind of game they wanted to see last night.
I agree, 100%. And there's a job, for me, there's a job right now for Brendan Lemieux with this team if he can play that agitating role in the right way. You know, he can't go over the edge. He can't do the same. There's been a bit of a thing with Lemieux over the last couple of years as just how he kind of conducts himself and learns as a pro. I think he's done really good in that resolve this year with the team. And yeah, he was out there. He threw some body checks. He got in a little bit of a tilt. And he was all over the ice. And he made the guys with Minnesota know when he was on the ice. So for him to continue to do that is a really good thing. And I kind of want to see the same thing from J.C. LaPon as well, who, you know, has had a couple of years now at the Moose to get his game going, and they're kind of in that same role right now. So for a bottom six chance that Paul Maurice says is available right now for a few players, he hasn't drawn anything into pen yet as to who will be in the lineup against Toronto, that this is a good opportunity for those young guys. And I think they're going to get a pretty good chance to do it on the road, too. Much like we saw with some of those young Minnesota players that were in the lineup here last night, I think those younger guys will get a chance and try and stir the pot a little bit on the road, too.
Brian, what do you expect from tomorrow night's lineup against the Oilers? I know they play again on Thursday and then again on the weekend. What kind of lineup do you expect, and who should we look to see in the lineup against the Edmonton on tomorrow night's game?
I think we'll get a better read. Obviously, I know we'll get a better read on that at practice today. But if I was to guess, I would think that we'll at least see Steve Mason dressed. I don't know if he'll play tomorrow night, but the one thing that he talked about during training camp from his standpoint coming in with a new organization is he wants to get at least three or four games in where he gets a chance to communicate with his defensemen, where he gets a feel of what Bell MTS Place is all about, learn the angles, learn the corners, get used to the sight lines there. So I would expect that we would see him at least in one of the next two games here just to get a feel and get up and running as the number one goaltender. But to be honest with you guys, you know, it's been so busy for everybody involved that we haven't had a chance to look much past last night's game, but that'll be on the menu here today for sure, and hopefully we get a little bit of a better read as to what we can find out. The club's got two skates again coming up, so it's busy for the staff right now. They'll go at 9 this morning, and they'll go again at noon this afternoon, so there's still some long days for the staff and the equipment guys to get everybody rolling through here with such a big number of players.
Great stuff. We'll let you get to it. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, boys. Have a good day.
See you, Munzee.
Jets analyst Brian Munns on TSN 1290 is the big show. We'll take a break. NHL news and notes. There's a new contract for the captain of the Minnesota Wild, and the hockey news has the top lines in the National Hockey League out. We'll talk about that next on the big show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back, and we cave. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time, there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. The Man Cave includes a $500 men's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza, two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to an upcoming home game this season at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, puck party, a rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits included in that. The Mam Cave this year, which is brand new, includes a $500 women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza party for 10 at Boston Pizza, two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls night out, including two seats for an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, and a rink water nights rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits for you as well. Select your cave of choice online right now at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner for each grand prize on Monday, October the 30th. Jim Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Big Show, TSN 1290, the Royal Sports Power Hour, and it's time for your NHL news and notes, and we'll start with last night, seconds before the puck dropped on the game, the Minnesota Wild announced they had signed their captain, Mikko Koivu, to a two-year extension worth $11 million. Is that enough? Is that good? Good bargain? Captain back from Minnesota? Do you care because it's Minnesota?
Oh, well, we should care, Minnesota,
5.5
right?
a year.
Yeah, and I think that's about right, right? Like, when you're talking about his interest, like he's turning 35 in March, but he's still giving you something north of a half a point a game, and just overall what he brings to the table as a player, you can't really say that there's a whole lot of diminishing aspect yet when you're talking about him averaging about 0.7 points a game over the last 2 years. So solid as all heck Mikko Koivu is, and is a part of what we, I believe, unanimously thought was arguably the deepest forward group in the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can keep those deals to 2 years, then I don't think there's much of a reason for concern for that. And he'll be 36 by the time it ends, or 37, turning 37 late into it. And, you know, as a 34-year-old, if you're able to get just about 60 points in a Selke nom,
yeah.
$5.5 million, I think you can work with that if you're the Minnesota Wild. So I think it's a fair deal.
Fair enough. I think it's good, too. And he's been a great player on and off the ice for that organization. So good for Mikko Koivu. Two-year, $11 million, 5.5 annual average value. Gentlemen, the Hockey News put out their best lines in the National Hockey League. And this is the three guys that they feel are the best. It's a 31, so it's a one from each team in order of they feel is the best. What do you think number one is?
Well, I know who number one is.
Okay,
and I have I have a real hard time disagreeing with it. From the overall 200-foot game, I mean, if I could, you know, basically, Patrice Bergeron is God to me, more or less, right? So I just absolutely love watching him play. And when you look at what Marchand brings to the table with Pasternak on top of that, I absolutely adore watching those guys play, man.
So the number one line in the National Hockey League, according to the Hockey News, is the Boston Bruins' Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and David Pasternak. Do you agree with that?
It's tough to argue against it, to be honest, right? I mean, when you combine Selke candidates down the middle, and even on the, like, Brad Marchand's a hell of a defensive player, too, mm-hmm. and they're popping in at least 60 points, I don't know if you can be, like, as good as some of the lines are directly after them, and there's some beauties, I'll take my chances. If I had a playoff series, I'll take my chances with Bergeron, Marchand, and then a little firecracker on the wing who can put up 70 points as a 21-year-old.
And the crazy thing to me about them guys is that you're talking about, you know, 60-ish points a guy, 70 for maybe Marchand and such, and you're talking an impossible Corsi of around 62% last year, which that's impossible.
That's NHL versus kind of AHL scrubs.
Truly,
and they're doing that against the best of the best every single night.
The second best line in the National Hockey League is Patrick Maroon, Connor McDavid, and Leon Draisaitl of the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, and who's gonna deny that?
I will.
Yeah,
I will. Two of the next two. I'm assuming the next two after them, I would put ahead of them.
Well, here you go. The third best line in the National Hockey League, according to the Hockey News, is Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Alexander Radulov of the Dallas Stars.
That's projecting. That's okay.
Number four is Nikolai Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, and Patrick Laine of the Winnipeg Jets.
Which probably isn't going to be aligned by the looks of things, but okay.
And number five is Jake Guentzel, Sidney Crosby, and Patrick Hornquist of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Who are you putting in front of McDavid's line?
I'll put the number three and four.
Really?
Just in terms of overall, like, Patrick Maroon's a fine player, but, and not only that, but Drysdale's not even going to be on that line anyways, which is kind of the confusing part.
They're going to last year, but same with the Jets, they're kind of speculating.
Yeah, but and if you want to put Scheifele, Laine, Wheeler as the line there, then I'm fine with that. I think Dallas and the Jets, I would put those two just behind Boston right now. In terms of when you have three guys like that, three all-stars.
Well, yeah, but then you have
the God. Yeah,
yeah, so like, sure, Maroon on one side, and, you know, like, but for Pete's sake. That's a tough one.
Well, here's the breakdown for the number two line in the National Hockey League, Maroon, McDavid, Draisaitl of the Oilers. Assuming Draisaitl stays on the wing, he and McDavid are the game's best duo. They carry Maroon, but he makes the most of playing with them. For the Dallas Stars, Ben Sagan and Radulov.
For years, right?
Radulov's underrated playmaking ability makes him a fascinating complement to the long productive pair of Ben and Sagan. Look out. For the Jets, at number four, Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, a real chance to outscore every line in hockey. Three diverse offensive weapons. Ehlers has the wheels, Scheifele has the vision, Laine has the shot.
I just so hope that line transpires. Like, and hey, last night watching Laine, Scheifele, and Wheeler was a bunch of fun against a sort of a second-rate Wild team. But it just there's just because of the youthfulness and the upside possibility of Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers. My goodness, would that be something? And then, but Ben Sagan, Radulov, what that's, they might yeah. accomplish this year is downright scary.
On paper, that's the line I want to watch the most. Just because we haven't seen Radulov with Dallas yet, but it's borderline not fair.
If
like, you
click,
shouldn't be allowed to put that line together.
The only thing I wonder about that team, guys, is to me, it's so often expected that you take, like, the addition, you know, and as it works with synergy onto a team where you just grab these pieces over here, add it, and everyone thinks there's going to be absolute carryover and there's just going to be a shot upward in grabbing free agents. But how often do we see that fail or you know, fail to transpire where, you know, bringing in all the studs that the Stars did and how often it doesn't do the Golden State thing, maybe, sort of thing, right?
Like, I would lean towards that line of thinking last year when he came back from the KHL and went to Montreal and we didn't know and all that. With these two guys and what Radulov shown last year with who he played with in Montreal, I would lean towards more this is going to work out very well.
But I'm not talking Radulov. I'm talking the Stars
oh,
in a larger
as a whole,
scope
yeah.
okay.
with Hanzel and Bishop and Mathot and Radulov and Hitchcock, like the entirety of what they've done in the offseason, is it just going to go from there to look out an additional 20 points? Is there going to be that kind of addition and that sort of surge by this team?
It's interesting, too, because Travis Yost had a poll once he kind of got whiff of what the Jets were going to do with their top line, and he put the Jets up against Dallas's top line and who's the best. Over 3,000 votes, and it's Ben Sagan get the slight edge, but it's 50-50 essentially.
Well, and there's also, to your point, Troy, a great article in here is if the Dallas Stars did enough on their defense to make them, elite.
Yeah.
If they fix that enough. Here's the other top 10 lines. Those are your top five. Your next top five are number six, Nashville Predators, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson. Number seven is Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, and TJ Oshie. Number eight is the Leafs, Patrick Marleau, Austin Matthews, and William Nylander.
Yeah, like there's a lot of...
It's a lot of good lines.
Yeah, like just that's like...
when Ovi's number seven and you can't really argue it, that's kind of terrifying.
You know what? This is interesting because number 10 I thought would be higher, but then when I see this breakdown, maybe not. But number nine is Rickard Rakell, Ryan Getzlaff, and Patrick Eaves. I would put number 10
like
ahead
that.
Of that.
Yeah.
Which is Tampa Bay's Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson, and Nikita Kucherov.
For sure.
Number 11 is Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Michael Ferland of the Flames. And then 12, 13, 14, we get into Brandon Saad, Jonathan Toews, and Richard Panik of the Blackhawks. Artemi Panarin, Alexander Wenberg, and Nick Foligno of the Columbus Blue Jackets is the 13th best line in the National Hockey League. I don't know about that.
It's a fun exercise for sure.
Mike Hoffman, Kyle Turris, Mark Stone of the Senators, and Jaden Schwartz, Braden Schenn, and Vladimir Tarasenko, number 15 from the Blues. So we'll get your thoughts on that on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. But up next, Andrew Collier, GM of the Winnipeg Goldeyes on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Welcome back to the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Weston, and Brandon Rewicki as we kick off Hour 3. We'll have another chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Jason Cole is going to join us at the bottom of the hour and talk about the NFL Week 2 and what's ahead for Week 3. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. A lot of time for your calls today at 9 a.m. And you know it's big news when we bump Mr. Milt Stegall, but it was an epic night at Shaw Park last night, and it'll be an even bigger night tonight. A Game 4 come-from-behind win.
We didn't bump Milt. I made a mistake with Milt.
Oh.
With the old, every once in a while, me and the time changes come into play.
This is what happens. I was waiting for Milt next time we have him on to go, you can't bump me! No. But he would be more than happy to be bumped if that was the case. For Andrew Collier, general manager of the Winnipeg Goldeyes, epic night last night at Shaw Park. Should be an even bigger night tonight for Game 5. Andrew, thank you for joining us today. Did you go to sleep at all, or how do you fall asleep after a game like that?
It was pretty tough. Got home about 2:30 and got a little bit of sleep and up at 7.
Here we go again. So it was 3-2 in the bottom of the ninth, and then tell us what happened.
Bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes, Turgeon at the plate, Darvall at second. Turgeon appeared to ground out. I actually had the trophy in my hand. Myself and the president of the league were on our way out of the tunnel, and everybody started yelling, balk, balk, and we went back into the production room, put the trophy down, and then Turgeon proceeded to hit a double and drove in Darvall, and then 8 innings later, we won.
Gee whiz. How do you think, what's going to happen from a pitching perspective tonight with what transpired last night?
It'll be a little light on pitching tonight. I don't even know how many pitchers we used, but Mikey O'Brien, that guy, not enough words to describe what he did. He went 6 innings, scoreless, 8 strikeouts, and for a starter to come out of the bullpen like that to throw even an inning is something, but to come out of the bullpen and throw 6 shutout was just incredible.
You've been around long enough, Andrew. Tonight's either going to be a 1-0 win in 10 innings or it's going to be 18-17.
Yeah, you know, after last night, I said in my tweet, you think you've seen everything, and then you see that. So who knows what's going to happen tonight.
7:05 is first pitch for Game 5, American Association. Your chance to see the Goldeyes clinch a championship on home field. Tickets still available?
They are. Box office will be open at 9 a.m. They're also available at Ticketmaster.ca/Goldeyes.
Awesome.
Appreciate you getting up, Andrew, doing this, and best of luck to you and the organization tonight at 7.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Van. Go get another ring.
Thank you.
Andrew Collier, general manager of the Winnipeg Goldeyes.
I can't recall the outfielder's name, but did you guys see that grab? I'm peeved at myself for not remembering his name, but that grab that was made during the course of the game to save a, I think it was in the 6th inning. It was absolutely pivotal. It was 2-2 at the time, I believe.
I think it was Josh Romanski.
It was just a spectacular grab, man. And just the whole, like, imagine that being, he's in the tunnel with the trophy, right, willing to concede, and then the whole bok, bok thing, like, just crazy.
Well,
man.
And there's video, like, Mike McIntyre put out the video of it, and Darren Bomey did as well, where they're walking out on the field,
they're
and the Wichita Wingnuts are actually celebrating as this happens, and it's just incredible. What a game, what an epic series, and the drama around this, too, you can't buy. Like, well, you can get a ticket to it, but literally, like, buy a ticket, go down there, but just how this is unfolded. And we go back to that game against Kansas City, or was that in the summer, they called the greatest game in independent baseball, when the Kansas City T-Bones were down 9-7 in the ninth, they're down to their last strike, guy hits a 2-run bomb to tie it, they then go on, and I believe 5 more runs, or whatever the final was, 14-9 was the final score, and it was on a wild pitch. It just, the season the Goldeyes have had has been filled with such live drama. It's unbelievable.
Just watching that thing with the Wingnuts, they're in full celebration mode, huddled in a big clump, jumping up and down. Gee whiz, just to have their heart ripped out.
How do you, like, how do you come back from that?
Yeah,
like, how do you prepare the next
day?
But even today, like, how do you because there's I watching the play, it's hard to tell if there was a balk or not because the video, you know, it's not HD quality, but I guarantee every single Wingnut is thinking that screwed us. We won the game. We got screwed. So I just wonder, like, as an athlete, how do you somehow find a way? Like, I guess you try and just play pissed off.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's the only way you can do it.
Steve Ace and play angry.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. You can get your tickets to the game, of course, tonight. Box office, as Andrew Collier said, open at 10 a.m. today. Game 5 and a chance to see the Winnipeg Goldeyes clinch a championship on home field advantage goes at Shaw Park, 7:05 tonight. We'll take a break. And well, no, actually, we're not going to take a break. I'm just trying to find this. Who made that catch yesterday?
Andrew Song. I don't know if it was him early on, but Andrew
started with an M. But
Andrew Song made a catch in the 13th. Inning
that wasn't,
to
that
save
that
a couple
this
of runs
like
as well.
This was like tied at 2 in the 6th inning or something. I know exactly what Troy's referencing, and I'm trying to find it to give the guy credit here. It was I thought it was Romanski.
Romanowski, yeah.
Romanowski, sorry. Romanski.
Romanski is
I'm
the
having
name
a day
uses
today.
At night.
Yeah. You want some Romanski?
It was Josh Romanski. It
from
was.
Romanansky?
Yeah.
Yeah, just, so Josh made this epic. It was tied 2-2.
Ace tweeted it last night. I'll tweet it out again.
Great stuff there. And they haven't won at home on the three championships they've won have all been won on the road, have they not? I know the last two have. So that would be interesting to see that as well.
Good stuff, man. And then with the you guys' thoughts on it, maybe bounce over to the Bombers here and upcoming the Bombers with a good opportunity here. The 8-3, a third string quarterback walking in this. And Wicks, I'm a little surprised you don't think the Bomber D's stout enough to keep him at bay. I'm going to dare say that I think this is a game here where the Bombers secondary, and I believe it'll be for the first time this year, hold a quarterback to less than 300 yards per game. It is mind-blowing to me, guys. Just a couple years ago, for quarterbacks to break the 300-yard barrier was quite – like, it was – that was almost a thing that put it up. Bam, that's a fantastic game. It is – it's becoming a rarity now for quarterbacks to not have at least 300 yards in the CFL. It's just amazing how much that's changed.
And the reason I have my doubts – you said it there. For the first time this year.
Yeah.
So – you can take your first time and shove it. I got 11 games worth of videotape that I can go back to and look at and say I just don't have confidence in it. Like on paper it makes sense, right? Like on paper you third string quarterback hasn't really played a whole lot at the CFL level other than being kind of the third down yardage guy.
He hasn't done anything here.
But I don't know. We've seen quarterbacks all year long terrorize the Bombers secondary. I think the best thing possible would be for the Bombers to get not even necessarily sacks, but just pressure up front and make Lindley's life uncomfortable in the pocket, because I don't think he's got a whole lot in terms of, you know, scrambling capability. But I just feel like if the Red Blacks target what's been the weak spot all year long, which is that one half of the field in the secondary, I think they can have some success there. I'm just not willing to hand it to the Bombers on a silver platter just yet.
I mean, he's thrown 14 balls in the CFL, 14 pass attempts. That's it. So, like, the whole – and you know, this first year in the CFL is this year. He's going to get it. He's still trying to understand everything that unfolding in front of him
so
from a defensive standpoint with an extra guy on the field. The secondary's got a huge edge. This could be – if the Bombers have a strong game, this could be a good old-fashioned spanking on Friday night, boys.
And coming off the bye, having some rest. And, you know, the bye is always an interesting question. You said there's no cons to it. But I don't know, like, if you're rolling, if you have momentum. I don't think that's the case with the Bombers. I think they needed some rest. They got it. They're getting healthy. Westerman, we'll have to see. But, you know, guys like Taylor Loeffler needed a week off. And I think coming off the bye, I don't think there'll be a lot of rust at all. And I agree with you. I think that I'm not underselling the Ottawa Redblacks. They literally won a game last week with two different backup quarterbacks earning them a victory.
Drew Tate hardly counts as a backup quarterback, like almost in the same way that Kevin Glenn is a backup quarterback, right? Like Drew Tate's a guy who's won a pile of games and
but when's he played last compared to Kevin Glenn? Kevin Glenn at least starts games every year. When was the last time Drew Tate did?
I just don't like a backup quarterback to me. Sure, is like a Dan LeFevre. That's more so like to me. Drew Tate is outside of injury had as promising a future as anybody did just a couple years ago. So that's not much of a drop off there to me from Trevor Harris. But what we see now with Lindley coming in, this is a real big drop-off. But I'm a little concerned, the point that Wicks made that I thought was real good, of the Mike Riley factor. Chuck up the 50-50 balls to Ellingson, Sinopoli, pick your receivers, and they got a pretty good bunch of them over in Ottawa. And those types of plays, the Bombers seem to have too often been on the wrong side of those. So those hope and a prayer, 40 yards down the field, maybe Lindley gets fortunate with a couple of those. But I would think they'd be able to just basically overwhelm his senses back there.
We'll have tickets for you to win later on the big show this morning for the Bombers and the Red Blacks at IGF on Friday night. We'll take a break. We'll qualify somebody, and then we'll hear some more audio from the Jets after their 3-2 shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild last night. This is the big show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
12th caller through at 780-1290 as we are taking our second qualifier of the morning on the Big Show as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. Five lucky listeners and their guests going to Vegas this November. The 10th at T-Mobile Arena, Friday, Golden Knights, Jets. We'll give you two hockey tickets, return airfare to and from Sin City, and four nights accommodations on the Strip. $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays here at 7:15, 8:15 on the Big Show, 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 on the afternoon ride. Watch for bonus chances to qualify online, including this morning on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. We'll qualify another person online via Facebook. TSN 1290 page once again. Make sure you tune in just after 10. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on the Big Show. Our next grand prize winner, congratulations to our first, Kevin, by the way. Next grand prize winner is next Monday, the 25th of September, then on October 9th, October 23rd, and November the 6th. For more information, check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And from us right here at TSN 1290, our first qualifier was Ken Warwick. And, of course, we will now take our second qualifier. The 12th caller through, Mr. Rewicki, was?
It is Dustin Vosper.
Dustin Vosper, you are in for the qualifying, and you get a Jets Gear gift card just for doing so. And once again, your next chance online, TSN Facebook page this morning, we're going to spin the big wheel where who knows how much the Jets Gear gift card would be. And there's Nickelback tickets with Cheap Trick on that big wheel as well.
Which you're probably going to hijack or scam somehow.
Brandon went with the big Prices
Boy,
Right spin
ever.
Last week.
I thought
we were going to be online for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but who came up in the clutch, right?
What was it?
80 bones? At
80,
least?
Yeah. 80 bones on a Jetskier gift card. So congratulations.
You put me on the Prices Right, I'll get a dollar 9 times out of 10.
Yes.
And the 10th time is 95 cents.
Congratulations again to Ryan. He is our first grand prize winner. And Dustin and Ken are in for the grand prize draws on the 25th, October 9th, 23rd, and November 6th. Jets lose in a shootout last night, 3-2, to the Minnesota Wild. 10 power plays, was it, for the Winnipeg Jets last night in total? Here's head coach Paul Maurice on the man advantage.
There were some glimpses of it being what we hoped it would be at some point, but I wouldn't evaluate. I mean, we've had two practices, didn't talk about it, showed a little video on it, and that was it, and out you go. So they got enough seam passes there. Scheif had three, I think, in the slot today that we really liked. Patty obviously gets that goal, and we'll like that group.
There was some real nice movement at times. I think it was their final two power plays. They didn't get a shot on net during regulation. And the one thing I saw too often, and I guess there we hear Coach say they really haven't touched on it yet, and as you know, two practices in prior to this game or whatever it was, but the old Dustin Byfuglien slowly coming up the ice on the power play, doop 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 doop, doop zero speed through the neutral zone, squeak over the red line and throw it into the opposing zone, only for it to exit all too quickly. That's got to go away. If that's a part of their, that absolutely has to disappear and go away. If that's a part of their power play, they're going to struggle again mightily this year.
Yeah, the entries were pretty – they were weak last night. But I'm not going to get on that too much because that could just be, you know, getting into game action for the first time. That sort of, so I'll kind of leave that to later on. I said I wouldn't complain about the power play because Laine was on his island. I'm going to throw that out the window because, man, I just don't think Adam Lowry's going to work on that first power play. Like, there's so much skill on this team. and you're going to go with a bit of a, what I feel is an archaic move, just putting the biggest forward you have in front of the net on the power play to create a screen. And I just don't think he has the skill necessary to be on that first line power play.
Especially because you put a circle around the net there in that 1-3-1, and think of what Wheeler's more capable of doing, for instance, in that spot than Lowry, right?
Yeah, and that's Wheeler was great on the half wall. Mm-hmm. I understand the Jets coaching staff wanting to keep him there. But Matthew Perreault's pretty slick on that side as well. And I just wonder if you can't kind of get the best of both worlds with having Wheeler either, whether you want, hey, look, if you want to put him in front of the net, then put Wheeler in front of the net. I wouldn't necessarily worry about the screen thing so much. But he's also better at deflections and better in tight than Lowry is. And then you have Perreault on the half wall, who I think does a tremendous job. And when the Jets had actual power play success a few seasons ago, it was Matty Perreault on that side that was kind of orchestrating everything.
Instead of Ehlers over there?
I would have Ehlers run his own unit. Let him do his own thing on the second unit.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what to say. So
you know, one thing I don't understand, boys, is why Kyle Connor wasn't utilized. There was 2 minutes left in the second period, and he had 3 minutes and 19 seconds of ice time. And I know it was essentially a special teams practice last night. But if you're looking at Kyle Connor and wanting him to, you know, even if he's penciled in, like you said, Wicks, and it's like not okay, they're not going out of their way to look at him, he still needs to show that he's arrived, I suppose. Why would you not be having a real good look at him? You know, they squeaked him onto the penalty kill late in the game, but why wouldn't he be on the second team power play in this game was strange to me.
Well, again, I look at who was on the power play, and even with four forwards, you have Perreault, Scheifele, Line A Ehlers, you have Wheeler, Little, Lowry was in front of the net, and
Armia was the Armia other forward was the on the
other,
second unit.
The other forward. So of those four guys, there's eight guys on the ice. That who are you going to take off for Kyle Connor?
Well, anybody. This is preseason. You're looking at guys, especially first game of preseason when you got a guy like Kyle Connor, you can't get on the ice.
But they said they're going to go with a veteran lineup, and they're going to start right from the start getting their – like to me, Kyle Connor doesn't look to be on the power play this year.
Nope, not to start.
With that depth.
And I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to get their power play looks. But at the same time, you thought maybe just to get Connor back into the game,
totally,
you throw him out there for one shift. But I get what Paul Maurice is doing, though, right? Like, you probably just go to Connor after the game and say, sorry, man. Like,
yeah, it just worked out like that.
That's just kind of how – and I kind of liked what he said afterwards where he, you know, he felt bad for Connor. But at the same time, he said, look, there's going to be games – not to that extent, but similar in the regular season where he's going to be on the bench for 10 minutes at a time because special teams will take hold, and he's going to have to find a way that once he gets back onto the ice to make an impact right away.
Yes, and I like that philosophy. I like that this is a year to pile up wins. This is a year to go make the playoffs. This isn't a year to make sure everybody's getting ice time and developing and all that in my mind. Now, do you want him to get some – I think he'll get some power play time in the preseason. But if there's not room for him on the top two power plays, then I have no problem with them going with the guys that they had. Although I do think he'll get some preseason time. But, I mean, when you look at this lineup and who's going to be on the power play, I don't think there's room for Kyle Connor on the power play unless there's an injury or something. And – let's not even go down the road to Nick Patan. Like, if there's no room for Kyle Connor on the power play, there's probably not room for Nick Patan.
Well, I don't know, man. If you're talking power play and if Kyle Connor starts putting a bunch of goals in the net and is being impactful and finding the spot on that second line, if that's the way it works out with Little and the mere fact that they're looking at Line A, Scheifele, Wheeler, and then Perreault, Little, and Ehlers, by all indication, it certainly looks like, and last night he was out there with Lowry and Armia, Connor was, right? So long as Ehlers is on the right side of Little, I find it real hard to believe that Kyle Connor will be on the second line with Ehlers on the right wing.
What do you guys think of Armia on the power play? 4 minutes, 57 seconds last night.
Well, there's a name where coming into this game, like, or at least as the game progressed, why I like to not look a little bit more so at Kyle Connor in that situation, give him ice time. But Joel, I don't know. Joel Armia, for sure, as a like on the penalty kill, if I'm going to emphasize where he's going to make a positive impact for us on special teams, is going to be on penalty kill.
I'd be okay with giving him a look there and seeing how he plays out there. I love watching him play. He's yeah. one of the – this is not hyperbole. He's legitimately one of the best of the NHL at stick work and turning the puck over. And you watch it. You watch his hands and you watch his stick work, and he's so good with the puck. But at some point, he's got to produce. And it's been a while now, and I don't know. Like I'd be willing to give him a chance on the power play, but that would be the shortest of leashes if you have a guy like Kyle Connor, who maybe his specialty might be giving him a chance with a man advantage, because at least in his chances in the AHL, in that second half of the season, he was putting the puck in at will. I don't know if Armia at this point has that capability.
Well, I think that's what they're trying to find out is, like, this is a big year for Armia in my mind. Are you going to be a third-line guy that produces Adam Lowry numbers, or are you going to step up? And, like, he's, in my mind, I like everything about Joel Armia, but he's got to produce. That's what he does. And I like him on the penalty kill. I like that.
What
but
do you mean,
you've
that's
got
what he
to
does
put
if
up
he
some
hasn't
points.
Done that yet?
Well, he's got the skill set to produce, and if you want to be one of those players, it's time. And that's why I think he got just under 5 minutes on the power play last night, as opposed to a Kyle Connor, as the evaluation process goes. We got to take a break. We'll talk some NFL next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and want to remind everybody that you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, half an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line, and an hour of your phone calls. We'll tee that up for you in our next segment. Right now, we're going to touch on the National Football League, and when we do that, we like to do that with our good friend Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm great. What's going on?
Not too much. I'm just wondering, if you wake up today and you're Eli Manning, what are your thoughts? Are you happy with your coach? Are you unhappy with your coach? Are you taking responsibility? Are you like, this is...
I'm looking over my left shoulder every time, going, what the heck is Eric Flowers doing? save me, dude. Please save me. You know, like, it's coming at me every single time, or every fifth or sixth play, I'm bailing because... This guy's just not doing a good job, and it's not for lack of physical skill. It's, and I don't know if it's lack of effort, but I don't know that Flowers understands what's being done to him. Like when Ziggy Ansah bull rushes him and he's not dropping his hips and, you know, bending a little more to sustain that. I mean, like, he's not recognizing really basic things. So you kind of go to the point of, Eric, do you understand football? Like, you get all the talent in the world, but you don't understand how this game works. And, like, what are you doing? And you're only getting worse right now. I mean, yesterday was abysmal. Ansah owned him, and the Giants can't function as a result.
Jason, a fair number of people across the board had the Giants possibly capturing that division, had the Seahawks maybe getting to the Super Bowl and winning it this year. Are both of the old lines of those teams at a point where you would say both teams are basically screwed for this year?
No, you never do that in the NFL because, look, the first four games, the first three or four games of the season are not completely representative of how the season is going to go. I mean, sometimes they are if a team is really, really bad. I don't think the Giants are really, really bad. I think that they've got a very good defense, and they've got some specific problems that they can fix. Now, Seattle, look, they've got some talent issues along the front, you know, their offensive line, especially after losing Fant to the ACL injury. So, you know, they've got issues because they've never really invested in that line as much as they should have, and depended on Russell Wilson. So you sort of sit there and go, okay, I'm not sure what this team's going to be able to do offensively on a consistent basis. But we've said that before in previous seasons, the previous 2 years, and eventually Russell Wilson got it going. So somehow he and Daryl Bevell figured out a way to get the offense moving, and then they seemed to get the ship going in the right direction. So I'm sort of holding out hope that that's what's going to happen for them, and that somehow, some way, both these teams are going to be able to take advantage of the defenses they've built and somehow get in the playoffs. But with the Giants especially, you look at the first 2 weeks and you go, this does not look like anything that's fixable, and it dates to last season.
Jason, I'm interested to get your impressions on the Broncos-Cowboys game, and specifically LaDainian Tomlinson saying yesterday that Ezekiel Elliott quit on the Cowboys.
Well, he didn't hustle. I mean, if you don't hustle, look, when you turn and you don't run after a guy after, an interception, you quit, right? So there's no question about it. You didn't hustle. And when those moments happen, you got to be called on the carpet. You got to be called on the carpet by other players. You got to be called on the carpet by your teammates, by your coach, by everybody. And so I think it's completely fair. Now, is that representative of how Ezekiel has played over the first season plus of his career? No. I think he got incredibly frustrated on Sunday where, you know, he gets 8 carries for 3 yards. He's just not doing anything productive at that point in time. And sometimes guys, you know, just lose their focus, right, you know, in a moment. So one time, you know, is probably forgivable. And you sit there and say, look, we can't have that. And he goes back and he fixes it. But in this but if it happens again and again and again, then we've had a problem. Now, I will add on to that, look, Ezekiel Elliott is probably fairly well distracted, too, because of everything that's happened over the last, you know, month and a half in terms of his fight with the NFL to stay on the field. And so that can get in your head as well. I don't want to use that as an excuse, and he's certainly responsible for much of that. But put it all together, and you have a guy who on a certain play may have lost his focus and concentration.
How good are the Kansas City Chiefs?
Really good. Really, really good. I mean, they're physically talented at every spot, and they're deep. They're deep with pass rushers. They're deep with running backs who can come in and play the kind of game that you want. They're probably not deep at wide receiver. Their tight end is terrific. They've got one of the best all-purpose players, you know, in the league, in Tyreek Hill. I mean, I don't see a lot of weaknesses on that team. You know, the loss of Eric Berry is substantial. That takes their defense from possibly being special to just being, you know, very good, probably one of the best 4 or 5 in the league. Whereas they could have been, you know, right there, number one or number two overall if you have Barry. But they've still got those pass rushers up front who can make a lot of things happen. So, look, I can see this team getting to the Super Bowl. My one question is always Alex Smith. And so far through the first couple of games, we've seen glimpses of Alex Smith being able to do things and make big plays that change games. But that's never been his MO, and Andrew Reid's really never pushed for that early in the, you know, during his career and their time together. So I always come back to, is Alex Smith going to be able to get it done when you're in red zone situations and when you need to get that critical play on 3rd and 8 when the defense is clamping down on you? And I think that this is a team that's suited for Alex Smith to finally win a Super Bowl, but there's still going to be a couple plays along the way that he's going to have to make.
Jason, I'm never a big proponent for firing coaches, but I'm watching Sean Payton.
But here we go.
Sean Payton, and I get that he won a Super Bowl there. I get what that city went through and how he and that team helped galvanize the city, the state, everything else. But I'm watching his own players, and the Adrian Peterson one I just throw out because Adrian Peterson is new and everything. I'm watching his players question him on the sidelines. I'm watching how this team has struggled the past 2 to 3 years. I remember the stories 2 or 3 years ago about maybe going in a different direction and whether the coach would get an extension or not. And to me, it just feels like the Saints should have made a change a couple of years ago and just for his benefit as a coach and for the organization to go in a different direction. Do you agree with that?
I don't necessarily disagree. I think that Sean Payton is always looking around going, where's the next challenge? You know, where can I go? And has always listened very closely to Bill Parcells. And Bill Parcells is a big proponent of you can only last so long in a place before your message burns out and before you burn out. And I think that Sean has gotten to a point where he's a little bit burned out, maybe even a little bit comfortable, feeling like he can survive there. And so I would have said, if I was Sean Payton, I would have really pushed to go to Indianapolis a year, at the end of last season and found a way to get out of the contract, even if it, was a matter of taking less money, and a million or two less. I know that sounds really cavalier with somebody else's money, but it probably would have been healthy for everybody involved for him to do that. And the other thing is, in New Orleans, you're in a special situation where the owner's not really capable of pushing buttons as much anymore, and so he doesn't have anybody to answer to. I mean, Mr. Benson, he's gotten up in age, and some of his faculties are lost. People will say that clearly. And so he's not really able to run herd over that team the way he did, 5 or 6 years ago. And I think that that's allowed Sean to get comfortable there. It's allowed Mickey Loomis to get comfortable there. And they're okay living on the glory of that season and some of the things that they did 4 and 5 years ago.
Jason, one of the cool stories this year is got to be Joe Thomas, and just a third overall pick in the 07 draft by the Browns, left tackle, 162 consecutive starts, has never missed a snap. So many cool stories and have so many stories with things related to the NFL. Do you have one specifically about Joe Thomas? And if not, what's your overall feeling of what he's doing and to stay in Cleveland?
I always go back. Joe Thomas is... For somebody to do that, you say, oh, my God, it must be a blood and guts, really serious, over-the-top kind of guy who will never let anything bother him and all these kinds of things. And I go back to draft day when Joe Thomas went fishing with his dad and didn't even pay attention to the draft and didn't really even care. And I say, I really appreciate that. Somebody who has been able to keep their life in a proper perspective of not fretting and freaking out over this job that so many players do freak out and need to. Everybody's different. And despite the fact that he's been so calm and sort of went along with the flow and hasn't pushed his way out of Cleveland when he probably should have to go to a contending team and has sort of watched his whole career kind of get wasted to this point, he's just been a lunch pail guy, and I have an appreciation for lunch pail guys who come in, do their job, and support an organization, even when that organization probably doesn't deserve their support. So that's sort of a big global story about, and not a very specific story about Joe Thomas, but that as an observer of football, that's what I really liked about him.
A judge has denied the NFL's request for a stay in the Ezekiel Elliott case. What does this mean going forward?
It means that it's going to get pushed up the courts. I mean, this was expected. I mean, you're not going to get any lower court, especially in Texas, that says, okay, it's all right for the NFL to do this. They're going to want to hear the arguments going forward and you know, force the NFL to explain why it does what it does in these kinds of cases. What's eventually going to happen is that it's going to get to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal is one of the most conservative courts in the land and eventually will affirm the NFL's right under the collective bargaining agreement to do what it's doing, just like the courts in New York did the same thing in a Brady case, right? And so ultimately the NFL is going to win. The question is, when are they going to win? You know, is this going to take a year plus before it's finally resolved? Is it going to take, you know, where does this get? And I suppose in most matters, always add more time. Like, if you think that something's going to get solved in a month, once it gets into the courts, add three more months and say, you know, it's going to be four. Or if you think it's going to get resolved in three, add, you know, three more to four more in there and anticipate six. And don't be surprised when it takes a year. And I've seen that in case after case after case after case, whether it's, you know, some dramatic ones like what happened in the Corey Stringer case after he died, or what happened in the Brady case where they turn a molehill into a mountain. And it took 2 years to resolve, right? So I suspect that this is going to somehow allow Ezekiel Elliott to play the season out, unless the Fifth Circuit Court sort of gets a burr in their butt and says, we want to get this thing taken care of right away, which most courts are not that interested in doing things really, really fast. So they tend to do things really, really slow.
At Jason Cole 62 on Twitter, and read his fine work at the Bleacher Report. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks, and enjoy week three.
No problem. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much, Jason.
I hope Jason and I are friends. I like him, and I love all his knowledge. Just said my friend.
Great chat, yeah.
Great chat. Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report, of course. BleacherReport.com. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants presenting Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN 1290. .ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, and 7 minutes away from opening the Boss Pizza fan line at 780-1290. By the way, our two qualifiers today, Ken and Dustin, congratulations to you on our hockey nights in Vegas, and we will be qualifying somebody else online after the show on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. So tune in for that. Kevin Hrushevsky and the Don Vito Roundtable will also have an opportunity for you to get in on the action, as will the afternoon ride at 5:15. Jets lose to the Wild 3-2 in a shootout last night. Get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line and the officiating. The number of penalties called seems to be the norm in the preseason. Paul Maurice mentioned it prior to the game. But first, we'll talk about the Jets. And what did you think of the first preseason game for the roster that was out there?
It was a weird one because of the number of penalties, 17 power plays in total in the game. It was like a special teams practice, more or less. There was just hardly any 5-on-5 play. It was entertaining. And there were some beauty things that were seen, right? The Line A Island blast was awesome. Some of the passing was fantastic. Connor Hellebuck looked steady and sound in net. And by and large, it was a good, solid, exciting game right down to the penalty shootout. So, you know, nothing really surprising at all. Brendan Lemieux looked comfortable out there. Tucker Pullman looked comfortable out there. Kyle Connor just flat out didn't get enough ice time, only just over 3 minutes, 3 minutes and 19 seconds with 2 minutes left in the second period. So that was disappointing and a lot of people wanting to watch him. But by and large and bottom line, overall, a fairly entertaining game. I was really surprised by the number of empty seats. There was probably upwards, I don't know, 300-500 empty seats in the lower bowl. Those seats come with season tickets. I don't understand why, if you're not going to the game, why there's so many people out there that have never been to a Jets game or would love to go. Why wouldn't you give those tickets away for people to go or give them to charity? I don't understand all the empty seats.
I don't have an answer for that either. That would seem to be the right move.
But there's a lot in there.
Sometimes, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I thought when it came to guys on the bubble trying to make the roster, I thought Brandon Lemieux and Marco Dano did themselves the best last night. I mean, watching them play kind of gets you a little jacked up for
as
what a fourth line could look
like. It's a pretty good, nifty little match there.
Yeah, exactly. And they showed at least a decent ability to maybe contribute some offense. And I thought Marco Dano a number of times made the right plays in terms of taking the puck down low and finding guys open. He found Scarbosa in the slot after lifting the stick of a wild player and setting up a nice scoring chance there. So I thought those two played well and strengthened their case to maybe squeak onto the team. I didn't like the power play with Adam Lowry on it, I'll be honest. I just don't think he's skilled enough to be out there with some of the guys that were out there on the power play. And the penalty kill him a little, I don't know. Like, you watch the Wild kill penalties, and they're aggressive, and they try not to give you any time with the puck to make quick decisions. The Jets, and maybe they're kind of holding the cards close to the vest here, but they were real passive again.
Super passive.
And
there was
a number of times where, most specifically the forwards, it was, I know Brian Little, I'm trying to remember who the other guy was, but they had a chance to kind of go at the puck, carry along the boards, and they sagged all the way back into the middle of the ice.
Super
kind of setting
small
up,
box.
Yeah, like almost like a soccer wall with a free kick. It was very bizarre to me. So I wonder if they're maybe trying to kind of, similar to what offensive coordinators do in football, kind of give you a false front and not show much, or if that's how they're going to try and kill penalties again this season.
Were you at the game? What did you think? Did you watch? Did you listen here on TSN 1290? Your thoughts on the Jets and their preseason shootout loss to the Minnesota Wild 3-2 last night. Who stood out to you? Who impressed you? Who do you want to talk about? Also, the Goldeyes in epic fashion with a balk to tie the game in the ninth, go on to 17 innings and avoid elimination. They play Game 5 tonight. Were you at the game? Can you tell us about it? What was it like? And your thoughts on Game 5 tonight. The Blue Bombers return to practice. Ryan Lindley will quarterback the Ottawa Red Blacks. Does he scare you? What are your expectations for the battle on Friday night? Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line. We also talked about the top lines in the National Hockey League from the Hockey News and their version of it. 780-1290, text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. You next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you and you with us on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. You can text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Jets losing a shootout to the Wild, 3-2. What are your thoughts? Who stood out? Who didn't? What did you like about it? The Goldeyes, epic Game 4 win in 17 innings to force a fifth and deciding game. And I want to give a shout-out, as the kids say, to Ross Murray on Twitter. He said, Goldeyes won their first championship at Winnipeg Stadium in 1994. At least I hope they did, because I jumped on the field to celebrate. So you'd look foolish if they didn't. I knew they won in 94. I wasn't sure if they did it at home or not. So thank you, Ross. I appreciate that. And the Goldeyes tonight, Game 5. What are your thoughts? A do or die for a championship, and the Bombers back at practice. Lots to get to. Top NHL lines from the Hockey News. 780-1290. Greg, you're on The Big Show kicking us off this morning. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning. I'm pretty excited for hockey again. I don't think I've been this excited for a Jets season since they came back from, since they came from Atlanta. But one small beef with the NHL, and I think it's going to be a very long hockey season if we continue to see 18, 16, 17 penalties per game. I understand that it's exhibition and the refs are trying to instill, this player conduct among the teams, and there's no slashing, no infractions, but man, watching the Vegas Knights game against Vancouver, 18 penalties, 5 power play goals. Last night, the Jets game, the Jets had, was it 10 power plays, I believe?
Yes.
It's hockey. And as a fan, it really slows the game down for me. It's almost every 2 minutes there's a whistle and a penalty. And the penalty against Scheifele, when he was behind the net in the third period, and it was just a standard hockey play where the defenseman rubbed him out against the boards, and it's a two-minute holding penalty. I mean, things like that are completely unnecessary. I'm all for player safety, but what we're going to start seeing, we're going to start seeing a lot of players start taking dives, and it's going to turn into soccer. So I just want to get your thoughts on what you think about the penalties.
I don't think you're going to see a lot of dives. Players take dives and stuff. When you get the stick gets up and you get a tap on the gloves, you know, do you see a lot of dives when you're watching international play? I don't think so. It's going to be a bit of a messy process. I have no doubt about that. But I couldn't, you know, it sounded like this caller didn't want this mentality to go forward into the regular season. But I'm sure hoping that it does carry forward and they do get consistent with the calling. And eventually the players, and I think it'll be fairly quickly, will change their approach to how they conduct themselves on the ice.
And the thing is, like, if in game one there's, say, 16 power plays in an NHL game, that's not on the refs. That's on the players. Like,
yes.
Adapt to this and adjust to it. They're smart enough that they're able to do that. And if they're unwilling or unable to, then that's on them. That's their problem. I'm not blaming the refs at all. I love the way the game was officiated last night, because last year there was way too many slashes, way too many. I mean, we saw Mathieu Perreault get his hand broken. Johnny Gaudreau had either a broken finger or a broken hand, and Mark Bathot
call on that Perreault thing. Remember
on either of those, and Mark Bathot had his finger chopped off.
Yeah.
So it comes down to what do you want? Yeah. Hey, if you want the slashing and that sort of thing, then I guess that's your jam, and I'm not going to change your mind on that regard. But I like the way the NHL's cracking down on this early in the preseason, and now it's on to the players. Now it's up to them to adjust to this new style.
Plus, if they adjust, what kind of offense are we going to see? Like, I mean, we look at these hacks, these slashes, especially when guys are cutting towards the middle of the neutral zone. Is that not going to help create a little bit more offensively,
well,
too?
It will.
If a guy beats you, he beats you.
You look at that, the hack that Wheeler took, the slash there, right? Cutting into the middle, was in a prime scoring place. Big time slash, a penalty, and the puck ends up bouncing off his stick because of that. So, yeah, the point you make for the hacking and whacking coming into the middle for sure.
It will be interesting, Greg. I appreciate the sentiments there. And I would presume that, that's the fear, I guess, is how long it takes. But from day one, of the preseason, this has been going on. So it shouldn't take more than, what are we talking, a month?
Well, yeah, probably.
Could be
a
two, month to two, maybe. I know Ray Ferraro said maybe a month to 6 weeks into the regular season.
It doesn't take the guys long once they travel across seas into some international tournament, typically, right, to adjust. So you'd hope they would be able to do so quickly here.
Yeah, it would.
But do you think the NHL is actually going to maintain their,
well, that's
their
my fear,
vision and consistency with this in regular season?
See, and that's my fear. And to Brandon's point, I love that. If you're in double overtime in a playoff game and a guy takes a penalty, it's not the ref's fault. It's the guy who took the penalty.
Yeah.
And that's the endurance part of it. That's the, you know, after five periods in a game six, can you keep their focus? Can you keep your legs moving? Can you, if a guy takes a penalty, it's a penalty. It's not the ref's fault. When a ref ruins the game, it's when I think he gets emotionally involved, maybe makes a call that's not there because somebody's upset him. Or it's rare that when a ref calls a penalty that it's not a penalty in my mind. There are some phantom calls, but they let way more go than not. So my concern has always been consistency.
Now, but now you're even asking a different question to not only carry this approach forward early in games, but to maintain through all the periods and overtime where typically as the game goes on,
yes,
they allow more to go, right? So that's really quite profound, the change that level. You wonder if they're willing or able to do that, because that enters the equation as well.
They even called the penalty in overtime, and it was a penalty, so I was happy about it. Like, if Minnesota lost that game, I'm sorry, in overtime, but that was a penalty. It should be called. The one thing I didn't want to see was 16 penalties called in the game. They go to overtime and they don't call anything. I was happy to see a penalty called in overtime. What are your thoughts on this and much more? 780-1290. Thanks for the call, Greg. Phil, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Doing well. Wanted to talk a little bit of NFL since you guys had Jason Cole on. He's a real beauty. So I wanted to touch base on a couple things with the NFL. First, how much more ridiculous is it now that Kaepernick doesn't have a job?
Yep.
When you see the complete just garbage quarterback play in the league. It's so unfortunate. I think it's such a ridiculous circumstance.
It's that much more obvious, right?
Oh, it couldn't be more obvious. Yeah. It's a joke. I mean, you see guys like Brian Hoyer playing, and it's like, and Kaepernick can't even sniff a job as a third stringer. It's ridiculous.
There was a piece, an article I saw on Sunday that said four teams that could use Colin Kaepernick today as their starter, not just a backup. And I didn't read the article because I agree with that without having to look, but I also didn't read it because one of the teams is Chicago Bears. Yeah. So I was like, but that's my point. Like, as a Bears fan, I think that, you know, you're not going to win games anyway, so put Mitch Trubisky in. So
yeah, I agree.
But
you're trying to prove with Glennon as the quarterback, right?
But I also understand your point that you're paying Mike Glennon $45 million over the next 3 years.
Right.
You're waiting for Mitch Trubisky to take over. Somewhere in that mix, couldn't Colin Kaepernick be sitting on that roster?
Well, I agree. I mean, I think Kaepernick could probably step onto the field on at least probably a third of the rosters with minimal experience with the playbook, and just because he's such an athlete, can come in and do a lot better than a lot of the quarterbacks that are already starting. I mean, like, he's such a freak of nature just as an athlete that he can make things happen just by, you know, making things happen with his feet. But, yeah, I just think it's such a ridiculous circumstance and an unfortunate one at that. The other thing I wanted to bring up, too, was the NFL always has really awesome stories. I'm not sure this one's caught a lot of media attention. Did you guys hear about that long snapper from Philly?
No.
So there was a long snapper who played for the Philadelphia Eagles. Been there his whole career. He was kind of like a fan favorite, kind of akin to Chris Svekovic for the Bombers. Like, everyone loved him, really entrenched in the community.
Yeah.
Anyways, he got traded, and the fans were furious. He got traded to New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, I do know this story. Go ahead.
And when you get traded, you have to get a physical. When New Orleans did the physical, they found an aneurysm that hadn't ruptured yet and saved his life. So he ended up having surgery. He's going to be fine, but he potentially could have died because it's kind of one of those silent killers that you don't know anything's there until it happens. But he happened to get one of those thorough physicals because he was being traded, and the Saints ended up finding this, and now he's going to live. Pretty remarkable story. So,
and what's bad about that is there's knowing the Philadelphia fans, one of them said, "Well, he was banged up. Glad we got rid of him."
Yeah,
I guarantee they took that stance because Philly fans are awful like that.
I suppose, but
it's a great story.
Amazing story that, like, fans were furious he was traded, fan favorite, and it turns out that it was a blessing in disguise, and the guy's life got saved. So, pretty cool story.
Yeah,
but I'll leave you guys with that, and have a good day. Take care.
Cool, man.
Good stuff, Phil. Thank you. This Kaepernick thing is
blatant, and, you know, he's basically being sacrificed for the movement that he started that's being carried on by a number of different players and different organizations, and it's just, history will reflect kindly, though, with good-hearted and minded people of Colin Kaepernick.
Thanks for the call, Phil and Greg. We appreciate it. More of your calls now on the Boston Pizza fan line if you want to weigh in on the conversation, 780-1290. Warren, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Warren.
Well. What a night, eh? The Lions win. The Gold Eyes in 17. I got a free stall for parking at work. It's all good.
Wow, like things are coming up aces. Are you Ken Weep?
Are you ready for trouble? Sounds like trouble's impending. Yeah.
Brandon, you called them a bunch of underachievers. Could you cue up the Powder Blues Band for me? I feel like listening to Doing It Right.
You're going to go all in on the Lions 2 games into the season?
Well, you know, $27 million. You know, gotta get what you pay for.
You know what stunned me about that flipping over in the intermission of the Jets game is Caldwell, the coach there, is doing the lame duck thing. He doesn't have a contract, and he was saying last night that he goes, "I'm fine with that. I want to focus on my team and my players, and the players love him." And John Gruden was going on and on and on about the lame duck thing and the fact that Caldwell, they're 2-0 now. They signed their quarterback. And he doesn't have a contract for next year.
Do you want to wait until this upcoming weekend's over before you talk too much?
Well, I don't know. The Caldwell thing is—it's good to see. You know, somebody cares about their team more than money. Eh?
There, you got Atlanta coming this weekend, though. I guess that'll be a good stiff test, huh?
Yes, that will be a good test.
If you pull off the W, we'll get you in first in line Monday morning. That's fair.
Warren, do you wish you looked at the schedule before?
Troy, you can't give Jets tickets away when the Lions are on Monday Night Football.
Oh, oh no. That's why it was okay. Yeah. Yeah, good point.
There you go, guys.
Take care, man.
Have a good day. And, you know, the Bears, they keep trying.
Hey, they're only two games out of the division lead. The Astros won the division. That's all I care about right now. Warren, thanks for the call. That was really good. We need more calls like that that start out with, well.
I get your guard up right away, right? Like, where's this going? Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Warren. Who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line?
We just lost the call there.
Oh, just lost the call there. Realistically, gentlemen, from what you've seen from the Lions.
We're talking more Detroit Lions here.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, here's the stat that also stood out to me last night. If you're 2-0, you have a 70% chance historically of making the playoffs in the NFL. If you're 0-2, it's something like less than 10%.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so your Bears are out. Is that the point here? Are you asking if Detroit captures the NFC North?
No, not the NFC North.
Just a wild card team at least?
I had the Giants going to the playoffs, and I have I don't think they'll even get close now. And Detroit, I didn't, and I might have them in the playoffs now.
Well, the bad thing for Detroit is this is their schedule for the next 6 weeks. Versus the Falcons at the Vikings, versus the Panthers at the Saints, versus the Steelers at the Packers. So enjoy the first couple of weeks here with Detroit. It looks like the defense has arrived to help Matthew Stafford and compliment him a little bit. Over the next 6 weeks here, you're sure going to get a real clear indication of just how real the Detroit Lions are.
You guys think the Lions can beat the Packers? Who are without two O-linemen and Jordy Nelson's banged up?
Yeah, they could. They could.
I bet you they split.
Yeah, it's going to be that the Packers, I do believe, are sort of fool's gold here, right? Like, still no run game. The injuries that will come around, and I still look at that defense and have pose a big time question.
At least Green Bay though has played two good teams so far.
Packers have a run game. Montgomery's been
solid. I like Ty Montgomery.
I'm worried about their O line. I'm worried about their defense.
We'll see. We'll see what the Lions are like against Atlanta. I think we'll get a better idea. But remember too, they were 9-4 going into the end of last season, and all they had to do was win one game. And they dropped three in a row and let the Packers take the division. So I'm not ready to jump on just yet.
Atlanta, if you wonder Atlanta week one, week two, right? Like, are they more the week two? If they're the week two team going forward, that's quite a story after the disappointment or disaster last year.
Remember Rodgers last year? Six games to go, might as well run the table. And then he did. Interesting. Warren, great call. We got another call to get to. We'll do that when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Taking your calls on the Detroit Lions fan line, on the Boston Pizza fan line, rather. 780-1290 on the Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Brent, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir. Hi, Brent.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Well. So you guys think you like the stick and fracture rule, do you?
If you're look, this is what we were talking about all of last year, and Brandon made the points. Corey Perry and Matthew Perreault, Johnny Gaudreau, Sidney Crosby and Mark Mathot. Did we not all talk about this and want it cleaned up last year?
Yeah, you did. But I guess my question is, do you think this is going to continue as the season gets older?
That's the million-dollar question, man.
Yeah, that's the big question.
Continue in the playoffs?
I would like to see it. Yeah,
million dollar question.
I think we all would, but do you think it will? I really don't think so.
Yeah, you couldn't really bet on it, could you?
I could bet it. I'll bet you anything now.
I mean, I agree that they continue it going forward and through the playoffs. It's hard to imagine that transpires.
especially after last season's playoffs, like the first and second round.
Mm-hmm. But and I know we're giving the NHL the benefit of the doubt here, but why would you do this? Like if you're not going to call this consistently in the regular season, you are just putting an advertisement out there for how inconsistent you are and what you're trying to do. Like if we go a month into the season and all of a sudden all this is going uncalled again, I have a serious problem with the National Hockey League.
Well, you've seen it year in, year out. They do this. They start off with new rules, and then they slowly go away from the intent of the rule and make
it. Well, I haven't seen it called this often, though. I haven't seen any rule change be impacted. Like we're talking 17 penalties in a game.
Yeah. I guess I'm going back to time, but remember the goal crease rule, and the guys had the skates in the crease?
Yeah.
And Dominic Hasek would argue with you, too, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good show. Thank you.
Thanks, Brent. What are you guys' legitimate thoughts? Do you think this will carry over?
It's real hard to imagine that they're – I sure hope so. And I commend them for – they're definitely identified it and are going to make an attempt at it. I just hope it's not a Mickey Mouse sort of – here's a splashy thing in the preseason games and then back to normal during the regular season. I just – hope as a league they have the internal fortitude more or less to stick to their guns here. But I, like seemingly everybody else, is really doubts that the NHL will do it. I'm not going to criticize them for attempting to do it, though.
I think regular season, I'm pretty confident that they'll be able to continue this strict enforcement of things. But like the caller touched on there and you guys mentioned, game one of the playoffs. Like, what do we see? That's going to be the real test for me. You can do it in the regular season and give yourself a pat on the back and look like everything's all hunky-dory here, but we saw in the postseason things get ratcheted to another level, and I just wonder if there won't be a reversion of what we had seen in the past there.
But even if it does revert to some degree, it should be better, right? Like, if they stay as this tight during the regular season, there'll probably be another slip come playoff time, but at least it shouldn't be as dramatic or in totality as it was last year. That was a gong show, right?
We'll squeeze Ron in on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, I'll be real quick. I'm a little concerned about that penalty that they're going to call it's going to slow the game down a little bit. Special teams will definitely be shown off big time. I just don't want to see the games, come to a stop just because of all these penalties slowing it down. I thought that we were supposed to be trying to pick things up. I'm not sure, but if they're going to do it, be consistent, and then I guess the guys are going to have to get used to it. I think there's going to be a little bit of a transition with that if it does continue. I also want to comment on the Bombers. It was good to see that third stringer come in last week for Ottawa. Now we've got some tape on him. I don't know how much tape we had on him before. I know Brandon's a little concerned about our secondary. I believe we're going to come out. We're going to take care of business against Ottawa. Anyways, take care, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Ron. We appreciate it. We'll touch on that and take more of your calls when we come back to the Big Show next. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, also online at tsn1290.ca, your home of the Winnipeg Jets. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki in the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Before we get to our next call, your thought on Ron's thoughts about getting some tape on the Ottawa Redblacks quarterback coming in?
Through 14 passes. There's not a whole lot of tape there.
I don't think you need tape anyways. Like, he's a big pocket passer. Don't watch tape of the QB. Watch tape of the routes that they run and cover their receivers for the first time this season.
I say go get him. The same way that you have to. His only chance is to be comfortable in the pocket, right? Yeah.
So you have no concern at all, and you have some concern.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I just don't see how you can't have concern. when the I think to Troy's estimation, the Bombers have allowed 300 plus passing yards in every game this season.
That's an issue. I just don't see how, with what the offense is doing right now, Ottawa's a decent team, but I think coming into IGF, where I believe this Bombers team is at right now, it would be monumentally disappointing if this is a tight game.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Derek, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still not jumping on the Bomber fantasy defense for the fantasy football, so until they start stopping somebody, we'll see. But anyways, I want to talk about the new rules in hockey. For the NHL, we all know that refereeing consistency from preseason, regular season, playoffs, it's till the end of time, it will never be consistent. So I think it's going to be an 82-game discussion on what these penalties are, and NHL will just revert back to what they do. But the one rule I wanted to talk about was the new one for no timeouts after an icing. And my question is, do you think teams are going to start using like the Saskatchewan Rough Rider, fake leg cramps, have to fix up their mask, change their stick, and all those other things when a team is exhausted and they ice the puck and they no longer can call their timeout? And then my second question to that is, do you think there's going to be a lot of injuries at that time for the team that's tired too? Because usually guys get injured when they're pretty tired. So I'm just wondering what you think on the NHL safety with that rule. In my opinion, the NHL should remove a bunch of rules because they can't currently work with the rules that they currently have anyway. So I think it's just go out there, play hockey, old-time school, old-time hockey.
What rules would you like to see getting rid of, Derek?
Well, I'm just saying, like, the NHL has always refereed a game based off the circumstance of the game, not what's going on in the ice, right? So if it's 2-1, we're not going to call a penalty against a team that's down by a goal. If it's, you know what I mean? So, like, for years and years and years, I have no idea what the NHL is calling when they're out there on the ice. So they keep implementing more rules. They can't even deal with the ones that they currently have.
I see what you're saying. Like, it's too much based on ebb and flow of the game and time of the game, right? Instead of just keeping it across the board, these are the rules. They're in effect in all three periods, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, like they just keep adding things, but they never follow them anyways. Like, it's always on what's going on in a game, not what's actually happening on the ice. So I don't think anything is going to change this year. We'll be talking about this at Game 82, and we'll be talking about it the second, third, fourth week into the playoffs as well. Yeah,
you're right, probably right about that. We always talk about managing the game, right? And I think more so in hockey than any other sport, by a light year, you hear that sort of term, and it shouldn't even come into play. A ref shouldn't have to manage a game. Ultimately, ideally, you should just be calling the rules and infractions as they exist. Those rules themselves should be what manage the game. There shouldn't be the gray area of officials doing that, or at least as little as possible to maintain the integrity of the game.
It's interesting, right? Because you watch football and you never hear that term. Like that and, you know, the most physical sport possible.
The only time I can remember hearing it, Wicks, is late in the fourth quarter in that the Baltimore-San Francisco Super Bowl, where the refs didn't call a pass interference.
Like DB and, receiver
yeah,
battles.
And they're talking those, like, late in games, those types of calls sometimes can go. And same with, like, Hail Mary, stuff like that, where they sort of let things stretch.
But even, like, especially holding. You'll see holding call all the time. And the Chiefs-Steelers playoff game last year, they called a holding on the two-point conversion. Why? Because it was a holding. Like that. I feel like football kind of gets it. But then you go to basketball, and basketball is very similar to hockey, where some games it's ticky-tack calls all the way through. Other games, it's basically a throwback to the 1980s, and it's a free-for-all. Like, it's people like to kind of view this as purely a hockey phenomenon, but it's just a bizarre way to view a singular game. As we, you know, like it's really interesting to me that hockey has always kind of been like that.
I think soccer, by and large, stays the same as well, right? Like, soccer, I don't believe that you're given more leniency late in game or if the game's tight sort of thing either. I think they do a pretty good job of staying consistent.
Yeah, if anything, in my experience of watching and playing soccer, it's those – I mean, how many times have we seen a penalty kick with 5 minutes to go because somebody brought somebody down in the box and they think, well, with 5 minutes he's not going to call this, and they do. So why – thanks for the call, Derek. Anybody else want to weigh in? 780-1290. So why do we like that, or do we come playoff time and – things are like
going. Letting the boys play. It's something.
Letting the boys play.
I don't know what it is, but it's in our DNA somehow that somehow that it makes it a little bit more fair. So I don't know what it is, man. It's, I don't know why. But that is, it is something that we've all grown up with, and therefore it's just kind of woven into our understanding, right? Yeah, it's weird. It's always bugged me too, though, that how different things, like during the course of a game, late in the game, like just the refs themselves, the league itself, and really not just the NHL, but hockey in general, could do itself a huge favor in just delivering. It could, and from an officiating standpoint, how much pressure do you take off the refs of any sport if you remove as much of the gray area interpretation as possible? Right, that does the officials a pile of favors. It's black and white. It's a penalty or not. Call it as you see it. Period. End of story. The more gray area and more subjective reasoning you're allowing your officials, the more trouble you're inviting. No question about that.
Or even the phrase I can't stand in hockey is the makeup call. Yeah. Well, they got three penalties, great. So now there's going to be a makeup call. Yeah. It's going to be weak, so you have to expect that. No, you don't. Yeah. You don't have to expect a makeup call if there's not a penalty there to be called. Yeah. This is the Boss Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. We're talking about the Jets' shootout loss to the Wild last night, the officiating in the game, 17 penalties total called, including one in overtime. The new standard, it's been going around the preseason. Since it started, Paul Maurice even mentioned this prior to the game, watching some preseason games, that this is what he expected. We're talking Bombers and, of course, Goldeyes. Were you at the game last night? Did you stay for all 17 innings? And will you be going tonight? What do you expect from that? Having said that, like Paul Maurice mentioning that prior to the game, having watched the other preseason games, there have only been a handful. That it looks like things are going to be called pretty tightly and you're not going to see a lot of 5-on-5. I would imagine he coached that prior to the game, and we still saw 17 penalties. Like the whole
And how about, like, when you break it down, the Jets allowed 7 power plays against, but won the special teams battle in that manner because they had 10 power plays of their own, right? Like, to think that you gave up seven power plays against, but you
good
still
discipline.
Come out on the right side of that, right? Yeah.
Like. That's kind of what it was. Yeah. Pretty good discipline night for the boys.
That's right.
Yeah.
+3 in the penalty section.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, never mind the regular season, just the end of the preseason, how quickly and if these penalties go down by a fair. I think it will. Players are smart enough to understand this. And you see it in international play all the time, too, early on in the tournaments.
Yep.
Teams just, they'll head to the box. They're not used to it. By the end of it, it kind of gets whittled down to a couple power plays a game. So I really don't expect this to continue.
And it's league where, like, Washington and Jersey, 7 and 8 power plays each team. You go to the Rangers and the Islanders, 7 and 8 power plays each team. Like, it's right across the league. It's pretty wild.
And I agree. I think I'm not, you know, naive enough to think that once the regular season starts for the Jets on October 4th that, you know, everybody will be adjusted. But I do believe in the first month they will adjust, like as it goes forward and people get more and more aware of it. That'll be interesting for sure to see how this plays out. What are your thoughts on the officiating? Do you like it? Do you hope the NHL stays consistent with it? Or would you like it to revert and go back to a little bit more leeway given the rules in the National Hockey League? 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on that. The Jets 3-2 overtime or shootout loss rather last night. Connor Hellebuyck got the start. It was questioned whether he would play the third period. I know Minnesota changed their game or goalie last night, but Paul Maurice deciding to go the full 64.55 minutes with Connor Hellebuyck last night. 34 saves on 36 shots. What did you think of Connor Hellebuyck's game?
How about Mikhailik?
Like
the couple of saves he made late in that game. There was one he just absolutely stoned. I can't recall who it was, but someone just
alone. It was Laine, wasn't it?
He had Perreault on back-to-back cut of plays.
Just alone across the crease, sprawling save. It was just gorgeous.
He had Laine early in the period on the one-timer on the power. Like it was comical how good he was.
Pretty impressive. And to come in for the third period, right? And then so third period overtime and he faces 19 shots.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. And the Jets, of course, generating 12 shots in overtime. Connor Hellebuyck looked sound, I would say, right? It looked big, soft, and square for the most part. And neither goal, the first goal certainly was just a chaos in front of him. There a man all alone on the doorstep. And then the second one, the 3-on-2, Dano trying to get back and not able to quite get there. And And the Wild player did a great job of getting it upstairs in a hurry. So yeah, I don't think you can criticize his game, and he looked comfortable in there, and the whole big soft square thing as well working for him.
Yeah, real good on his angles as well in the game, and I just thought there was no negatives, I thought.
No.
That's probably more so what you want out of the goalie in the preseason, right? No causes for concern at all.
No soft goal.
Played the angles well. They work on that a lot, I know, with the goaltending coach. Also, what we're talking about is the Hockey News put out their best lines in hockey. And I think that what they did was they ranked them in from every team. So although I would say even the Jets' second line is better than some of other teams' top lines, this is the rankings. Boston is number one. The Hockey News feels they have the best line in hockey. Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, and David Pasternak. A true powerhouse, two top-end goal scorers flanking the game's best two-way center. These guys control the game in either end. Number two is Patrick Maroon, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl of the Oilers. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and the newly acquired Alexander Radulov is the third best line in the National Hockey League going into the season in the Hockey News mind. Number four is the Winnipeg Jets line of Nikolai Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine. And number five is Jake Guentzel, Sidney Crosby, and Patrick Hornquist.
Sure can't disagree with the top line. Like, it just, from a mechanical standpoint, almost what Bergeron and Marchand with Pasternak?
Pasternak.
What they put together here, and just gorgeous stuff. When you're talking Bergeron specifically, I still feel, even though he's held in high regard, I do believe he's undervalued to me. You're talking a guy who's like 60% at the dot, an impossible 62% last year of possession number, which is, it's video game-esque. Right, and then to produce still at like a 50-60 type points sort of thing, what they do is it's just magical what they do from a 200-foot game, sort of setting the bar. But a lot of real interesting conversation there. I think they have Matthews' line ranked eighth in that, and although there's some debates, like some of their lines probably aren't going to come to fruition, possibly when they're talking about Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine, for instance. But when you're talking about Matthews' line in Toronto there, at eighth, that's the one that can jump up the very most. That could possibly finish like a top three type line by the end of the season.
Marlo Matthews, Nylander. Number nine is Rickard Rakell, Ryan Getzlaff, Patrick Eves. And number 10 is Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov for the Lightning. I'd move that up ahead of the Ducks.
I think that
line,
Ducks line is a surprising one.
Yeah.
Especially this year.
I love Rakell, but that's a little too high for me. It's crazy, though, that really, whether it's Wheeler, Scheifele, Laine, or you put Ehlers on that line, the Jets will go into the season with a no doubt about it top five first line of the NHL, which is pretty, like, wherever you want to put them in there, it's still pretty crazy to think about.
And I would argue maybe top 15 with two lines.
Top 15?
Well, do you think the Jets' second line is better than Rakell, Getzlaff, and Eves? As you said, whether it's Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, or if it's a little,
what's 12 through 15?
Goudreau, Monahan, Furlan, and Calgary is 11. 12 is Brandon Saad, Jonathan Toews, Richard Panik in Chicago. Columbus is Panarin, Wenberg, and Foligno is 13. Hoffman, Turris, Stone is 14 in Ottawa. Schwartz, Shen, and Tarasenko is 15th for St. Louis.
I don't think their second line is anywhere near top 15. When you're talking, you don't even know, like,
maybe Columbus, but some of those other ones are pretty. Although I don't like Brady.
You don't think Brian Little, Blake Wheeler,
and Perreault,
and Matthew Perreault are not on the same parallel as Rakell, Getzlaff, and Eves?
No.
Hoffman, Turris, Stone in Ottawa?
Yeah, there, maybe, sure.
That's the 14th. Panarin, Wenberg, Foligno in Columbus? I'd put Brian Little up against
probably right around. It's probably right around 15.
I think they have two lines in the top 15 in the league. We'll take a break, take another call when we come back to Boss Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Wester, Brandon Rewicki, our final segment of the day. Want to remind everybody we will be qualifying somebody for our Hockey Nights in Vegas on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Go there after 10 a.m. and stand by as we'll be spinning the big wheel and drawing another name online for your qualification. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Grace, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi. First of all, congratulations to Hellebuck. I think you did a good job. Secondly, I don't really understand the purpose of the new rule. And it's, to me, it doesn't seem that important if it doesn't in any way further protect the players from head injuries. So I would say, like last night, I was just bored to tears. I mean, that was ridiculous. Talk about slowing down a game. It almost come to a halt. So I think if the guys get their together in the first quarter of the season, and we after that we stop having a lot of penalties, go for it. But I think if the guys don't really get it together, and by the end of the first quarter of the season, we're still got the game grinding to a halt, then I think they got to have another look at it.
Yeah, it'll. I'm sure they'll evaluate it the preseason before the regular season starts. But Grace, don't you feel that, like you said, as long as it doesn't prevent head injuries, it's also preventing, like Mark Mathot lost the end of his finger on one of those slashes last year from Sidney Crosby. They reattached it, but he literally almost chopped it clean off. And if we're going to talk player safety, there's that. Matthew Perreault had his thumb broken, I believe, last year in a slash like that from Corey Perry, which that's the stuff they were calling last night. And Johnny Gaudreau suffered a hand injury from another slash like that. So I understand what you're saying because it dragged on. I think they're hoping that they do this in the preseason and the players get used to it.
Yes.
And the pace picks up, yeah. And there's not as many of these. But if you're bringing in player safety, to me, in my mind, I think that that's a key part to it. The injuries we saw last year and to star players like the Jets lost Perreault, Calgary lost Gaudreau, Mark Mathot for the Ottawa Senators. That's a big part of player safety as well.
It is something for the overall betterment of the game, I believe, and there will be a bit of a muddy, difficult process, and hopefully that, for the most part, gets worked out in these seven games of preseason.
Thanks for the call, Grace. Who's next on the Boss Pizza fan line?
Yeah, let's squeeze Jonesy in here.
Jonesy, you're our last caller of the day. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just was wondering about the third line here with the Jets. All this talk about, like, Perreault or Connor and Lowry and Armia. And I'm thinking Armia, like, he has to show the results, right? And I'm just kind of wondering if they maybe give a shot to somebody else there, whether that's a Brendan Lemieux or somebody else, because I think Armia's had his kind of chance, and you can still have him on the penalty kill on the fourth line because that's kind of his strength. But just kind of wondering what your thoughts are about this thought about Joel Armia kind of been almost given a third and fourth line spot. I'll hang up and let you guys answer. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonesy. As for my thought about Kyle Connor making the team and making it on the second line, the more and more I hear it, like Ken Weeb was reporting it, and they were talking a lot about on the pre and post that if Connor makes a team, it looks like it will be on the third line. Perreault will be on the second. And then, so I'll clarify that. I was hoping he'd be on or second line, but it looks like Connor will be on the third. But your guys' thoughts on Armia being on that third line?
So, hey, man, if Adam Lowry's on the third line as the center, to me, Joel Armia created an immense number of scoring opportunities and set up Matthias and Lowry to no end last year. That's the way I remember it. And, you know, for him, if people are concerned or upset about his level of production last year at 0.33 points per game in the 57 games played, I mean, everyone that watched the games, there was a level of snake bit, I think, to what he was doing out there as well. And even that line in general, if Kyle Connor's on the left side instead of Matthias, does that change the narrative a little bit if you have someone who's more likely to be that much more productive? And also, does that buoy up and carry Adam Lowry to maybe be a little bit more productive? I have no problem whatsoever with Joel Armia on the right wing on the third line. I think he's fantastic up and down the ice, and I think that his leash is long. He's going to be there for a long time.
There does need to be, I think, an increased level of production for him. And I don't know, like, you look at his shooting percentage in his career, and it's 8.6, which is, it's really, really low. And for a guy of his skill level, that number should be bumped up a little bit higher. And he just, like, he gets the chances. He does everything right. It's just, is he going to be able to finish at the NHL level to really make this team just imagine if Joel Armia can pump in somewhere around 30, 35 points to go along with whatever Kyle Connor does on the other wing.
Well, and Troy made the point of, like, if he's never done it, why do you think that? And it's because I see the skill he has, but yet I look at his career, 2 years in Rochester in the AHL, 54 games, 27 points, 33 games, 25 points, 7 and 10 goals, Ice Caps, 21 games, 8 points, Moose, 18 games, 8 points, 2 seasons with the Jets, 43 games and 57 games, 10 and 19 points, to your point. Like, I'm waiting for him to put up 30, 40 points.
Boys, he didn't have
and historically, he never has.
Look who, like, he was out there with Matthias and Lowry for the vast majority of the season last year.
We'll continue the conversation, of course, tomorrow. It's another game day as the Winnipeg Jets host the Edmonton Oilers for game 2 of the preseason. And don't forget, the Bombers host the Red Blacks this Friday at IGF. We have a pair of tickets for you to take in. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers at 8-3 hosting the Ottawa Red Blacks. That's 12th caller through, 780-1290. We'll get tickets to the Bomber-Red Blacks game on Friday, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290. TSN 1290's Facebook page. We're going to qualify somebody else shortly for our hockey nights in Vegas as well. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back on The Big Show tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.